On the Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Hello, friends. You're now listening to the Lifestyle, Leisure, and Sports Show you never knew was two of those things.
I think we can all acknowledge that if this fails, you two will be fired and I will remain. So, no pressure.
Bo Bishop, a regional media icon. Winner of Emmys. Purveyor of the good life.
Sir, you don't know that for a fact.
I just said it on the radio.
Also, two guys this company named Employee of the Month.
What are you talking about?
Paul Hogan is Hulk Hogan's brother.
Uh-huh.
Look it up.
Because it's Hulk Hogan. That's his real name.
One guy is from Australia. The other one is from Tampa.
Maybe he's from Hollywood, brother.
Not brothers. Chops.
Yes, they are.
This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, let's do it live on a Tuesday edition of the program. Both of the boys with you for the next three. Uncle Dom going to stop by at 10:33. We'll do some NFL draft as well. Just a couple of days away. Lots of quarterbacks going to go off the top. Will we get the order right? Will there be a rush up for J.J. McCarthy? We will get into that. The Real Truth hits at 10 o'clock on that side of things. Has LeBron James won his last ever playoff series? Maybe. Maybe. Might just be the Real Truth.
Washed.
I mean, he might. Well, no, he's unbelievable, but he's kind of stuck. So we'll get to that as it goes along. The Cavs with another fun one last night. Good night on the ice, too. It was thrilling about an hour there watching the Cavs. They weren't thrilling. I mean, they were pretty dominant. But then watching the Leafs and Bruins and then flipping back to the Knicks and Philly and the way that all of that sorted out. I did have, while all that was going on, it was the rare instance where all of the family was kind of congregated in the basement. And, you know, I feel very, very happy saying this. My wife still got it a little bit, more than a little bit, a lot. And she came downstairs. The boys were playing basketball and I was sitting on the sectional and she came downstairs. We had the two TVs on. We were watching and there are a certain type of pant that the ladies wear and they're very popular and they look good in them. So she came down and she, on a rare instance, like sat right next to me. Like she wanted to like cuddle in the middle of the, like 8 o'clock. Like, we're 25 again. I'm like, well, I'll take it if I can get it. Let's fine. So the kids are playing basketball in the background. And without even thinking about it, as she sat down, I put my arm around her and grabbed her backside. To which point, NBC goes, Dad, what? You just grabbed Mom's gyat. And I go, what? And then I'm caught,
her
right?
Gat?
I don't even... Gyat? I don't... G-Y... I go, what is a gyat? I don't know what that is. Do you guys have a point of reference on that? You're younger than me. Do you know what that means?
In like a slang term, I've definitely heard it, but it is yes, definitely generation or two generations below me as far as words that people use.
That people say?
I don't think, I mean, with the context, I get it, but yes. I don't know if I would know it just, like I've heard it before, but I don't know if and I don't know if it also is something that is kind of ambiguous and can change what it's referring to.
It might be
to.
Various parts. I have no idea. In fact, I could have said something that could get us kicked off the air by the FCC. I'm not even sure. Trust me, I'm completely ignorant to whatever it is. I think I know, but I don't. So he goes, so then he was, God bless him, he was beet red, embarrassed, like couldn't stop laughing, tearing, crying, all of the emotions. And I didn't really have a get out of jail free card. Like it happened. I didn't even think about it. It's so rare that we like sit next to each other and watch football, let alone the fact that she would want to like cuddle up at 8 o'clock on a Monday. So the whole thing was strange. And I just was dead to rights, just dead to rights. And so I just said, look, one day you'll understand. And he goes, but I don't want to see it. I said, fair. That's fair. I thank God Beamsy and Bootsy did not. But then NBC like wanted to like have a talk about it. I'm like, not now, just not right now, down the road. My wife was embarrassed the whole thing, but it was just subconscious. I just,
what kind of talk? Like, he's like, is that something people do?
They're not there yet, Chopper. They're not there to like those type of spots. He's in sixth grade. So they're still like, you know, everything's at a distance.
Yeah.
He's had 16 girlfriends, but it's all at a distance is kind of the way that
it's,
it goes.
It's past cooties, but yeah, it's definitely not too.
Oh yeah. I've seen like a picture of him like putting his arm around his girlfriend.
And that's a big deal.
That's a huge deal. So like, there's like a photo of him doing that. That's the extent of it. But as I mentioned, it was, so all of this stuff was kind of happening at once. In the NBA, I was critical on Monday, like the first round, most of the first games were pretty brutal, but last night was pretty great. You had a thrilling series, a thrilling finish to Philly and New York. The Knicks guys were down five with the ball late. And then there, by the way, Mike Breen on the call, it's tough to beat. So I'm not going to describe it. Let's just listen to Mike Breen. Here's the 6-point sequence.
Brunson double team, splits the defense. Lowry takes it away, picked up by DiVincenzo. 8 on the 24, DiVincenzo, corner to Brunson. Sidestep, three-pointer, shot, it's good! Took the bounce and went in! 2-point game. Ball knocked loose, and Maxey gets knocked down. Hart takes it away, out top to DiVincenzo, his shot won't go. Hartenstein, the rebound. Hartenstein gets it out to Ananobi. DiVincenzo, a three. Bang! Bang! Knicks take a 1-point lead with 13 seconds remaining.
So down five to up one in 35-ish seconds of real time.
That clip is 37 and seconds, and I think it was like 15 seconds of real game time.
Yeah. On MSG, we courtesy MSG and Mike Breen on the call. The Villanova connection's unbelievable because they got Hart, too. So all of that happened. Alita, it reminded me of the old, there's a play Reggie Miller made at the Garden back in the 90s that was like that, where he hit like consecutive threes back to back, and they went from down five to up one. This just doesn't happen. So the Knicks, Brunson, I didn't think he was this good. I did not. He's a culture tornado, that dude. Like, he's flipped all of it. Like, they can't win the East. I think there's a ceiling to it, but like, who wouldn't want to be a part of that now with the way that that's been built? And Philly is, God bless Embiid, but they're probably cooked in this thing, because they probably feel like they should have won both games. They didn't win either. And they're going to file a grievance with the NBA over the officiating across the first two games, but that's not going to get them anywhere.
Nick Nurse does have a gripe. Maxey hits the floor. I think it was after it was, so they scored the three. Maxey, they inbound it mm-hmm. poorly. So there's a little bit of, yes, you have a gripe in that he did call a timeout after the inbound. It was a poor inbound, but Maxey goes to the floor. Nurse is trying to call a timeout, and the ref just ignores him.
Well, it looked to me, Reese, like he was trying to call a timeout when they were struggling to inbound.
So he explains that he tries to call one twice.
Okay, that's what it looked like on television. It looked like he was, because he's right there.
And he gets ignored.
And he got ignored. Now it's loud, it's the Garden, but like there's three of them on the court. One of them should see it, right? I mean, it feels to me like one of them should see it.
Especially in that moment, like, you should also be like, oh, there could be a time, like, you should know when the timeout could be likely called.
But right now, I think Sixers fans want to file a grievance against him and the team.
Yeah, probably. I mean, Embiid is just, he just hobbled. He just can't, God bless him. I don't even know.
Still had 34 points.
I know. He's just such a force of nature. I did not see the other one live, so the Lakers game ends on a buzzer beater as well. So L.A. is up 15 at 15 at half.
20 in the third at one point. Yeah.
20 in the third. They're up 10 going into the fourth. I said this the other day. It reminded me so much of LeBron that last year with the Cavs when they were playing the Warriors with Durant. And it's like he can play almost perfect. Anthony Davis can play almost perfect. And it's just not enough. Like, Denver just has so many weapons. And it's a tie game. Lakers don't get it at their end, and then this happens at the other end. Here's Kevin Harlan on TNT.
Denver with the timeout. We are tied. I love it. Don't call it. Tie ball game. Worst can happen. We go to overtime. Murray makes a move. There's a
He's my favorite of all. Harlan is my guy. He's my absolute favorite basketball play-by-play guy. I just love him to death. It's over Anthony Davis, by the way. Like, Anthony Davis had pretty good defense, but Murray got enough separation that he was able to shoot over it and win it. And so, and by the way, LeBron was unbelievable. Anthony Davis was like 14 of 18. Both of those guys were great.
D'Angelo Russell actually bounced back and had a really good game as well.
They just don't have the firepower.
It's two games in a row. In the second half, they're up double digits, and in this one, even ballooning it to 20, and they just give it up to the Nuggets because the Nuggets just stick it out, and they're the better team, and it's very clear after these two games. Maybe they get one at home, but I don't see any chance they win the series.
Even if they do, it'll be pretty hollow, right?
Right.
I mean, this is either going to be over in four or five. Like, you can't put that type of effort into two road games and come up empty-handed and then come out of it with it's not going to end well.
Did you see AD post game? He wasn't happy about it. He was asked about that final play, and he just said, Jamal Murray made a shot, and he literally does a mic drop. He's holding the mic and says, Jamal Murray made a shot, and he just drops it on the table and just walks out.
Well, they were upset about a call at the end of the third on D'Angelo, which was reviewed and then taken off. He was supposed to shoot two free throws.
LeBron's like, why do we even have a video center?
Why do we have it if we're not going to replay this stuff? I will tell you that for a pure entertainment, and I don't know, sometimes it's just as simple as the branding, the third period of the Leafs and Bruins was awesome. Absolutely awesome. Matthews gets the game winner. And I don't know if it's just Leafs, Bruins, and all of that, but that was, this was all kind of, the Lakers stuff was later, but the Cavs and then the Sixers, Knicks stuff, and then the Bruins stuff, it was kind of all happened at the same time. I can be cynical about these two sports. I'll be the first to admit it. And we talk maybe sometimes too much about where they are in ratings and stuff, but you just ignore all of that. And if you get nights like the one you had last night, sports pretty damn good. It was really good last night. It was thrilling stuff across both the NBA and the NHL.
And unfortunately, live, I actually chose Cavs Magic, and that didn't pay off for me. I initially put on, because it was easier to find, the Knicks and 76ers, and I was like, I wonder if Bally, like, because I don't have NBA TV, but I was like, I wonder if Bally can get it, so I could get the Cavs game. And then I watched it, or kind of watched it. They never, two games in a row, the Cavs just never did enough to quite pull you in, which is a good, it's in a good way, because they just were in control, but they, this Magic team, they don't even care. They weren't even trying at the end either.
Well, here, this is one of the, I'm probably the last guy. I mean, I pay $400 a month for cable or something like that. So this is the benefit of having it, because I was bouncing.
You can,
right?
Flip around.
I'm bouncing around. So I'd bounce, like, I keep an eye on the Cavs. You know, they were there on a screen, and then I was bouncing between, very simply, between Maple Leafs and the Knicks Sixers game. So I was kind of able to watch all three at the same time. Speaking of the Cavs, pretty dominant last night. But this is a sleepy series. Do you guys know when they play on Thursday? We will get to that coming up next. And a pretty dominant start for the Cavs in that series. Plus, my God, we had courtside hijinks. We had a guy getting hurt. Wagner flying into the crowd. It was nuts. We'll get into all of that. Fun little program for you here on a Tuesday edition. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Death, taxes, and beating Michigan every damn year. This is your flagship home for Ohio State football. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. The uncle you never knew you had. The friends you kind of wish you didn't. This is Bishop and Friends.
Any other friends, it's Bo here for my great friends at the Diamond Cellar. Springtime is giving season. Everything from weddings to anniversaries, new babies, graduations, everything in between. I'm here to tell you firsthand, there's no better place to find the perfect gift for any occasion than the Diamond Cellar. A truly timeless gift. They got them there. True Jeweler, they are the finest selection of luxury jewelry, world-class designers, or they can create something one-of-a-kind just for you. Diamond Cellar. Check them out. Sawmill Road, Easton Town Center, or DiamondCellar.com. I did get an update on Gyat, which was from Ryan, G-Y-A-T, acronym, Girl, Your Is Thick. So I'm thinking I know my wife's not going to be crazy about that, and I also think NBC doesn't know, because he refers to anything as that.
Did you look that up, or did a user send that to you?
Ryan sent it to me.
Okay.
No, I had no clue.
He spell thick with a CK or two Cs?
Hold, please.
Because that's a very important distinction.
CK.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know. Is it the right way?
For some reason online, the two Cs has become the version of the word thick that you use to describe what you're talking about.
I see. Okay. Yeah. It's got to be. It's all in the same realm of stuff. Remember I told you guys about how he's like, Dad, I'm a top G, the top G guy. Have I told you guys about that guy? What color is your Bugatti? Breathe air, like all of that. And then they do this thing where they like pose and they show like their jawline.
Like, is he mewing? Like, does he do that?
I don't know
yet? So this is something I've heard about online. It's like it's sort of like a pose with your face where you kind of like stick your lips out and your chin or something. I don't know.
Supposed to,
they mew, like, and it's like disrespectful, but it's also supposed to like look more attractive, but it just looks stupid when you do it all the time.
Like absolute idiots. Yeah. He'll go, Dad, breathe air. What else would I be doing? I don't know. The Cavs, this was over by the second quarter, which is good, right, Reese? I mean, you want blowout, but it was like
it's never
Magic kind of hung around, but it felt over.
with the Cleveland Cavaliers, brother, it's never over before halftime.
It felt like it to me. I was like, yeah, they're just Orlando just doesn't have it.
They don't have.
They can't match the firepower. No. And it was like there was a time in the fourth quarter where Orlando cut it to 8 or 9, and then Donovan Mitchell just went to the rim twice and scored. And it's like, okay, that's it. Game over.
Every time they threatened, yeah, the Cavs were able to respond right away. And so these two games, and it's interesting with the Cavs because the two games as a whole have not been super exciting, but you can tell that the Cavalier players are super into this and they're not letting up and they're excited even through the fourth quarter. Donovan Mitchell's coming off the bench cheering on Darius Garland. I can't even remember what the play was, but I just remember that standing out to me that like he could clearly rest. It's the fourth quarter. This Magic team isn't making a push, but no, they are all still very into it. The crowd is still very into it. It's playoff basketball. Back up in Cleveland, no, I don't think this team's going to win the NBA Finals, but they look like they're finally going to win that playoff series. We're talking about when was the last time they won that playoff series without LeBron yesterday. This is, it's kind of a momentous thing for the franchise.
That'd be the early 90s, right? Like Mark Price era?
It had to be.
Yeah. It's been a long time since they've done it. What I think's cool about this, Reese, and I know you follow this closer than I do, what I was wondering was, because of the LeBron time, where really from probably his fourth or fifth year on, and then the second stint the entire time, it was like you have LeBron go win the NBA championship. So it was like nothing was satisfying really until you got to the finals. But the fans up there aren't taking it that. They're loving this. They're soaking this up. The crowds up there have been incredible for the first two games. So they're all in. And I think that they know in the back of their mind this is a flawed team, especially when it comes to playing Boston. But I think they're just thrilled to have a little bit something to watch in the spring and for this to be exciting for a couple weeks.
Yeah, I think just the idea that everyone's just living in this moment.
Yeah.
Right. For Cleveland to have that first round playoff series. I think Red Panda was in the building last night. So she was pretty remarkable. Like this Orlando Magic team is good. And that's all I can say really about them. Because Paolo Banchero was 9 of 20, and Jalen Suggs was dealing with an injury in the first half last night. The Wagner twins are fun villains to have in this.
Yeah.
So it provides a pretty good first-round matchup. You know, it's got a lot that you can be invested in, and it's very difficult for me, though, knowing that this isn't the Knicks. Like, this... People will tell you that this is a good way to get over last year. I think even Cavs players were saying it after the game. Like, this was a good way to rinse that taste out of their mouths. And that's fine for them, but this isn't that for me. Because this feels like they're just, whatever they want, whenever they want, they can get it on the Magic. Because the Magic are nowhere near as talented as the Cavaliers. And
they're just young.
One thing I wanted to do, I didn't want to do, was come into this and be like, yeah, great, but talk to me when they win a series against an actual playoff team.
But so you're not being moved by their success against the Magic into any other sense of confidence moving on in the playoffs, even if what it looks like they're going to win the series. But by the way, yes, 92-93, they won a first round series against the Nets and didn't win another one until 05-06.
I thought I was going to say 93. That seemed about right in terms of when it had been. I think what you're probably hoping for, first of all, so I'm proud of the people up there that are like jacked up and the atmosphere has been awesome. That's very cool. But I think what you want is, if you want to see it truly go nuts, when it gets to Boston, split the first two games in Boston and go. This is the most Cavaliers basketball I've watched all season. I didn't watch much of it all season long, watched the first two games of this series. It's interesting. Like, they really are, the roster is pretty flawed in the way that it's built because Garland and Mitchell just, he's a better version of Garland, but when you have two small guards who are both want the ball in their hand, like Garland ends up being like he's an off ball guy, and he's not, so it's just a weird, it's kind of a redundant lineup. And I can see how they're like big picture, like, what do we do? How far can we take this? I think those are questions for this summer, but I look at them and I just go like, there's a ceiling on this.
Yes. I think you just get through whatever this playoff run becomes. Yeah, whoever you face in the next round, I think if you can make a series of it, like you said, you know, win one on the road, come back with the series, with an ability to at least win the series for your fan base to get them involved with this. Because, I think this roster is going to look marginally different next season. And I think it should. If your goal is to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals, maybe make an NBA Finals run out of the core you have right now.
Yeah, just to me, like the Garland and Mitchell.
Yeah, that's where it starts for me.
They're just kind of redundant. And Mitchell's the better of the two, but he's the one who's worth more and one who's going to have to make a decision this summer. Donovan Mitchell's a true superstar. Like, he's pretty ridiculous. He was available post-game saying the Cavs aren't even playing their best basketball yet.
I think there's a level that we can continue to improve at. You know, I think the fourth quarter last 7 minutes or so, like, can't happen. You know what I mean? Like, we're fortunate we got the win. We did a lot of good things. But the challenge is we got to fix that. You know what I mean? It starts with me. You know, I hold myself to that standard. And those last 6, 7, 8 minutes were on me. You know, I got to do my job. You know, and obviously I scored when I needed to, made the right play or whatever, but like that can't happen. And that starts with me. And, you know, it's great we got the win. We're up 2-0, but we're not looking just to be up 2-0, looking to be perfect. You know what I mean? And there's no such thing as perfection, but you continuously want to chase it. And if I'm not doing my job, then that's kind of my mode right now. Like I started out great and didn't really do, you know, my thing throughout the course of the game. You know, I did a lot of different things, but I can be better for the group, you know, as a whole, and I will be.
I don't know what more. He's pretty damn good. And when they need something, they get it. Yeah. Look, they're up. By the way, Thursday at 6:30. Did I see that right?
Are you sure that's not just coverage?
Or is that coverage? It's got to be 7, right? Like, it can't be 6:30.
It says 7 on ESPN right now.
All
right, but
so
another NBA TV, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is where, so where this game should be.
Yeah, that's it. This series is going to be relegated there, but yeah. You get the Bally, so you can do that either way, whichever way you want to do it. All right, NFL draft will be competing against this on Thursday night. Adam Schefter emptied his notebook. What could be happening at the top of the draft? What teams are nimble? What teams can change the trajectory of their franchise? We'll get to it coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on The Fan.
If you're starting your day any other way, you're doing it wrong. Morning Juice with Bobby and Beamer.
Weekdays starting at 6.
The Fans. What's up?
What's up, man? What's up, Juice?
All right, here's what's up on a Tuesday. NFL draft, 2 days away. Quarterback's going to go at the top of this thing. Marv will be on watch. How far does he... I'm not going to say fall, although I almost did. He's going to be the first. I'm still very confident he'll be the first position player taken in the draft. He's gone through this in such a unique way. We've never had a prospect do this where they basically didn't do anything and just said, my tape's my tape. I was a pro day last year. I don't need to do it again. He met with a few people, but that's kind of it. But it feels like that it's not going to affect him. There's been some chatter in the lead up to this. I always refer to it as silly season, where you hear about teams liking this guy over this guy. And I was reading Schefter, and he was talking about, kind of emptied his notebook every Monday before the draft. And we'll get into some of the highlights of this. But there was one guy who was anonymously quoted saying, I like Jaden Daniels more than Caleb Williams, and it's not close. And it's like, okay, but who is that? Like, is that a scout? Can that opinion be held accountable? Like that quote, like you can just throw anything out and it goes in something like this, but like, I would like that scout who said that. If Jaden Daniels falls on his face, I would like him to be, I'd like to know who that is. I'd like to know the guy.
That's two things about it. One, it's measurable once they get to the league, like who is better. You can usually figure that out, especially comparing just position to position. A little bit harder, you know, off position if people are arguing about who should you take at this spot. But if you're comparing quarterbacks, one, that can be figured out. And two, personal preference is just that. There are probably people out there who think Godfather 3 is the best one. You know?
And had a chance if Sofia Coppola's... Sofia Coppola could have been Winona Ryder. That was the original casting. Mm-hmm. If it's Winona Ryder instead of Sofia Coppola... Now, it's still confusing with the International Immobiliari. But is that... And Michael trying to, like, all of a sudden buy the Vatican Bank or whatever. Like, that stuff's pretty confusing. But I think that there was something great there. But Sofia Coppola, who's one of the great directors, she's acting opposite Pacino and Andy Garcia. Andy Garcia is unbelievable in 3. He's unbelievable. But it's the Coppola part that gets...
My point, though, being is that...
I know, I just wanted to talk about Godfather 3 for a second.
People love in this draft time to put their subjective opinion out there like it's objective. And it doesn't mean anything besides that's your opinion. Yes, if enough people get to it, then there starts to be a little bit more of a consensus. But I think that the wide receiver stuff has calmed down. I think that was all silly season. So there's still a few people throwing it out there from time to time. But it was 3 weeks ago or so where the whole Malik Nabers thing was really starting to heat up. And it seems like it's course corrected back to Marvin Harrison's going to be the first. Definitely first receiver. But like you said, I think first non-quarterback off the board.
It was right after his pro day. Neighbor's pro day.
Yeah, that's right.
He ran really
fast.
Be
smart. Don't be dumb. Don't think too hard.
CJ, that's pretty good. The Arizona Cardinals kind of control this draft because it, well, or do they? Is it the Patriots? Will the, now, so Bob Kraft says, I would like to get an elite young quarterback in this draft, right? Because they've already moved off of Mac Jones. He's backing up in Jacksonville. They have Jacoby Brissett, so they're going to draft a quarterback. And Bob Kraft said, look, I'd like to, a good young quarterback here. Elliot Wolf is running that draft along with Jonathan Kraft, Bob's kid. I knew Elliot when he was with the Browns. He is certainly willing to wheel and deal and certainly willing to, I think, I would not at all be surprised if they put that number three pick up and just listen to what was out there. And if there was a potential for them, like Minnesota is drafting 11, right? I think they're 11.
Yeah, Minnesota's 11 and Denver's 12, or it could be vice versa there, but it's all something. Right.
So
yeah.
Could I see a scenario where the Patriots trade out of three for Minnesota to go get, let's say Minnesota loves Drake May. Let's say it goes according to plan and number two is Jaden Daniels, and then number three is Drake May, which is what Schefter is alluding to, that the Commanders are expected to pick Daniels too. So May's sitting there at three. I'm pretty sure Josh McCown is at Minnesota now, and he coached Drake May in high school. So he would have some intellectual knowledge on what May is as a human. I mean, he's obviously grown a lot. But so would there be a scenario where Minnesota goes 11, a two, and maybe two twos, and or maybe even another
maybe next
one.
Year's one, yeah.
So all of a sudden, if you're New England, do you drop down to 11, but then trade back up to get J.J. McCarthy? Is that something in play? Maybe. And maybe that's where the Chargers come into play there. So I think there could be some movement, which could make this pretty exciting on Thursday night.
That is an interesting one, because from New England's standpoint, trading out means, oh, you're not going to get your quarterback. But if you have a pretty good, you know, pretty good idea with agreeing to the trade with Minnesota that they're going to take Drake May, well, then that takes one more team out that you think could move up. And so you're competing with less guys at 4 and 5 than possibly, depending on if Marvin Harrison goes 4, or would they have to go back up to that to get their quarterback. I think that could work. It's risky. You'd have to pull off the, that's almost a draft day move. It's not quite there, but it does feel like a throw in David Putney at a certain point that, like, hey, I flipped my number three pick and just ended up with number four and the guy I wanted anyways.
Did you do that? Did we do that last year? Like, what?
That was 2 years ago where I watched it and just gave you all the ridiculousness from it.
Where you had like the breakdown of what he ended up doing, all the transactions he ended up doing to make all of that work.
To, in the end, draft an off-ball linebacker, a middle linebacker, that they're talking about like his pass rushing ability, and it's like, yeah, then make him an outside linebacker. It doesn't make any sense. No, but he is a Buckeye.
He's a Buckeye. God bless him. So that was part of it. I don't think Denver's going to do anything. They signed Zach Wilson yesterday. To me, it looks like Denver's full tank.
If they play Zach Wilson, then they are. Yeah.
It's a remarkable position.
They got Stidham, Wilson, there's some DiNucci?
Ben DiNucci.
Ben DiNucci.
Who used to be with the Cowboys, right?
I think, to me, I look at Denver, like, could I see Denver, like, trading Patrick Surtain even for a one? Yeah. Like, I think it's going to be the most contentious season between Sean Payton basically saying, trust me, I know what I'm doing and you don't. And the Denver media, it's going to be comedy out there.
So, yes.
He has no patience for it.
Sean Payton said, sure, I'll try it your guys' way. I'll come in. We'll see how Russell Wilson is. He says, I do not like this. We're going down to the screws, to the studs. Yeah. We're tearing this all out and restarting.
I think that's what that roster looked. That's what it looks like to me. What they're doing is that.
And in the meantime, wait out another couple of years of Patrick Mahomes anyways, because you're not going to win the division.
No. Yeah.
Although if you're Patrick Mahomes today and like you see a division team pick up a quarterback, you're like, oh, what's this? Then it's Zach Wilson. You go, oh, okay.
Well, it was funny yesterday.
I don't even mind it from Denver's perspective. Like 2 years ago, Wilson was, people were saying, boy, maybe this kid's the most talented guy in the whole draft. Big arm, all of that stuff. He's really young. They gave up a 7 for him. It's a pick swap, 6-7 pick swap. It's nothing. Like,
they're paying him $2.75 million. They split his salary in half. So kick the tires on the talent.
Like, this doesn't bother me at all. I think you do that. I mean, this is similar to what Pittsburgh did with Justin Fields. Like, you kick the tires on a pick. Now, the one thing about Pittsburgh's situation with Fields is they're paying him 5 this year, and then they have to make a decision on him for next year. And that's the tricky part. With Justin.
Because that fifth-year option is May 2nd, I believe, that people have to decide on it.
And they won't, but then they're going to have to deal with it next year.
Then it'll just be a free agent. Both of these guys will, because Denver's definitely not picking up. Because it's like, they pay him $2.75, and then his fifth-year option's like over $20 million next year. Yeah. Like, they're not going to do that.
No. So, I don't know about Fields. The more I talked about, I always felt like he would have gotten a better shot somewhere. But talking to people around the league, the one thing that you hear is kind of a consensus is when something is schemed up and it's open schemed, he doesn't hit it. Now, he's good enough athletically and arm strength that he then can turn it sometimes into a great wild play, but he misses the easy stuff, and it frustrates the hell out of coaches because stuff is schemed right and he doesn't see it or can't get it there or is inaccurate. And then he can improvise and make plays. So then kind of the consensus was, like, if he were to be a successful player, you'd have to build something entirely around his skill set, a la Jalen Hurts, a la Lamar Jackson a couple of years ago. Like, really just – or even Kaepernick with San Francisco. Like, this is the skills. Let's work this. And I said, well, is it – so like a one read and then go thing. And they're like, well, but he's not even hitting the first read.
And the problem right now in the NFL is there's so many offensive minded coaches that, like, their whole thing of, like, their livelihood is my system works. I can bring this and make it work. And so they don't want to always change to the personnel that they have at quarterback.
It would have to be a defensive minded coach with a Greg Roman type offensive coordinator. Like, that would be that's the way it would have to go. Or like Monken, who built what he did in Baltimore around Lamar. That's kind of the situation that I think it would need. But this will be fun to monitor this as we get closer to Thursday. What happens if there are some trades at the top of the draft? NHL into their Stanley Cup playoffs. Are you watching in town? We have a team here, but do you have NHL fever? We'll get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We're the highest rated sports radio station in America. There's no joke there. We just are. The Fan. Ohio's sports destination. The best hair on the air. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Did you guys see some of these images of the flooding in Dubai last week of the airport? The airport looked like a lake, and then there was like, it looks like a river, but I think it's a street, and they had like, what color is your Bugatti? Bugattis and Bentleys and stuff, and like G-Wagons on rafts. Trying to save them from the flooding?
It's so are wild. You saying there's going to be a flood of gently used Bugattis and Jeeps hitting the market
They're floating down the streets in Dubai.
About a month.
A year's worth of rain for them in a 24-hour period is what it says.
About this slightly water-damaged Bugatti, but it's a Bugatti, so.
It's a Bugatti.
there they are. Actually, a Rolls Royce.
No, they're on like rafts floating down what I think was probably a street. Trying to salvage these luxury vehicles.
Is it Go-Go Gadget Rolls-Royce raft? Like, does it pop out from under the car?
It looks like the one that Harrison Ford uses in Temple of the Doom to jump out of the plane. With short round? That's what it looks like to me. Like, one of those. Like, by the way, I'm not sure that would work.
So, I wonder, too, like, is this just something... Like, is this just a freak weather event? Or is it, like, a warning that, hey, you can't just build something to the size of a major city in 20 years?
I don't know. It's a great question. Yeah, those are what ifs. Every once in a while, that will pop up on my Instagram, probably because my kids do that Top G clown, and I think he's over there. And so that stuff will pop up of like Dubai 1995,
yeah,
2020. And you go, whoa, that's, have you guys know anybody who's been, a buddy of mine went for his honeymoon. I remember that and said it was just nuts. But I don't know if I have an interest in going.
What does it feel like? Does it feel like New York City or does it feel like Las Vegas or like what
he said it felt like Star Wars.
So it felt like a city on a different planet. Okay.
Yeah. He said it felt like a different planet. It's
like Tatooine. Was the feeling? I don't want to go to Tatooine.
I don't know my planets of Star Wars that well.
Tatooine would love a year's worth of rain, actually, in a week.
Well, the moisture.
Which one's Tatooine?
Moisture farmers would.
Yes, that's where Luke Skywalker, where they find him with the two suns, and it's a desert planet.
Oh, that's so bleak.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's so bleak. Yeah, where's
Coruscant's,
the bar?
Coruscant's not any better.
Which one's that?
That's the center of the galaxy, the imperial capital.
Okay, I'm thinking more along the lines of like the second most recent three. So okay. I guess the original, I guess it would be episodes 1, 2, 3, like when they're all in the city and they're on the hover ships flying around.
What city is that? Because I believe Tatooine is that the same planet where they do the pod racing in the prequel series? Yeah.
People are right now. Someone who loves Star Wars is screaming at us, going, "Idiots! It's this."
We only know. Reeser knows enough. Reeser knows more than me, and then Bo.
I'm just trying to figure out what city and what movie you're talking about because you're like 1, 2, and 3. And
the one with like the flying cars in episode two, where
that's Coruscant.
Okay,
yeah,
that's like Attack of the Clones.
That's the Imperial capital.
Okay, so
that's
like that
a city. It's a planet city.
Okay, so that's what I. That's what was kind of the feeling I got on Dubai.
That'd be a sucky vacation too because it's just industrial.
He did say he skied in a mall, like so that was kind of cool. They had like a ski lift there.
So it's just a very large roof and you
indoor do city. Yeah.
I don't understand that
at all. It's wild. It's a long way to get there. I know that. As I mentioned early in the program, I loved watching the Leafs and Bruins. Leafs, I mean, I'm always fascinated by them because they have this just crazy passion. It's probably closely... Is it the Knicks? Are they the doppelganger for Toronto for us in America? Seems like it. Like the
because they also have to have some futility to them. Like haven't been able to get there in modern day.
They haven't
really
won the cup since the 60s, like 1960.
Yeah,
And they don't really get close very often. They don't win a lot of playoff series. They finally did that last year. They've got this incredible firepower. Matthews with 69 goals on the year. He scored the game winner yesterday. It was that Brad Marchand's the worst dude. He baited Bertuzzi, baited him, and then Bertuzzi took the bait and he slapped, just kind of tapped him on the back of his calf, and Marchand fell like he got sniped, like someone shot his leg off. He fell to the ground. So they were on a power play. They killed it in the third period and they won 3-2. What I'm curious about is when, and you guys have a better chance than me when you go to a fun casual joint or when you're about town, having a beer or whatever for happy hours and those type of things. Is the hockey on? Are people into it if the Blue Jackets aren't?
There's thousands of TVs in every establishment you go to.
Is there a congregation around it?
Now, what might help them, though, too, is like some of those bar TVs might just be left on TNT and it might go from an NBA game to a hockey game. So that
and you get charmed in the morning.
Yes.
Yes, you do.
So there's that.
I used to love going out during NBA playoffs when I was in college because the bars would have TNT on for the NBA playoffs. And then after, like, the Dark Knight would come on. And then we'd be in the bar. There'd be no sound, but we'd watch the Dark Knight or Jurassic World or whatever it was.
They did throw a lot of Dark Knight out in those days, for sure. Let's play put that hits, on the brother. Poll. Are you, do this, put this on the poll. Are you more interested, are you watching the NHL playoffs? Or should it be, are you more interested in NHL or NBA postseason?
I think
which
that
of those
one.
Two polls is more interesting?
Because are you more interested in NHL or NBA postseason play?
So the one thing that's tricky, though, is you do have a relatively semi-local tie. We know historically that if the Cavs make a run, we get behind it. Now, is that a factor of LeBron James, though? Because that's our only litmus test for it is when LeBron's been in Cleveland. And then we're usually the number two or number three ranked city in the country for them. When they were in the finals those years, they were number two in the whole country in terms of watching them. Like, we adopt them then.
I find that I think it's just because the teams are so much smaller and the guys are so much more identifiable that I find it so much easier to dive into other teams in the NBA. If the Blue Jackets are in the playoffs, of course I'm watching. But that's really the only hockey team I watch consistently at all, so like this time of year to dive right back into it, it doesn't feel like there's any familiarity a ton of times with these rosters. Like, obviously I know who Austin Matthews is, and the Bruins are a classic franchise, but can Vegas and Dallas do it for me, or would I rather watch the Bucks and whoever they're playing?
All right, so let's do the NBA one. Let's do, are you more Are you more likely to watch? What's the best way to phrase it? How'd you phrase it, Reese?
I got it right now. Bo Bishop wants to know, are you more interested in the NBA or NHL playoffs this year?
Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's see how that tracks. My hunch is that the NBA will win slightly, although I know we have a ton of loyal hockey listeners, and they're very active on social.
That's where I'm thinking NHL will take it.
They might, because there's diehards, and it might be something to the effect of, like, even if they're not watching it, they want hockey to win.
Because even if you walked around here at the Fan, I think you would, like, just amongst hosts and producers here, maybe, I think NHL would get it slightly.
Maybe we should ask more of a truth-telling one and not a what-I-want-to-say one and say, did you watch the NBA or the NHL last night?
Well, yeah.
Because if you say, which one are you more interested in, you're right. Hockey guys are always going to say the NHL, but is that actually the habits that they're doing right now?
Maybe take the NBA out of it. Are you watching the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Just get a flat answer on it.
And don't put the NBA up.
The poll's already up.
All right. We'll go with that.
There's no going back now.
You win, Reese. Real Truth coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
If you haven't thought about Buckeye football today, I'm sorry to tell you that you're dead. Our condolences. Your home of the Buckeyes. The Fan. Bo knows many people. He talks to the interesting ones on this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour here on a Tuesday dish of the program. 10 o'clock on a Tuesday, we hit the real truth. Hit it, fellas.
Bishop and Friends present The Real Truth.
Sponsored by Diamond Cellar. Over 76 years of experience and guaranteed lowest prices on Sawmill Road or DiamondCellar.com.
Sorry, I missed the button there. I was looking Tom Brady's resume from the late 90s in case the NFL draft didn't work out for him.
What was he going for?
It looks like he worked at Merrill Lynch, so I guess something in finance. He was in summer of 1998. It lists him as an intern. Can you imagine if looking back, 30 years ago or 25 years ago or so, that Tom Brady was your intern?
I feel that way about Holly Saunders.
Yeah. But the other thing that's funny, too, is on the top of it, it says Thomas E. Brady Jr., one of the most famous people in the world, and for sure one of us, one of the top people we think of when we think of football. I had no idea he was a junior.
You didn't know? There was Tom Jr.
Yeah. Did you know that?
Tommy. No, I don't guess I know. I didn't.
Yeah.
He's never gone by it.
No. Okay. That's why I was slightly distracted there.
You're good. You're fine.
College football teams have spring portal figured out. Is that the real truth?
Seems like it. Now, we have 7 days for this to go chaotic. But so far, I was kind of wrong on this. We probably should have listened to Paul a couple of weeks ago. I asked him about Alabama, and he said, I don't think it'll be as crazy as you think. And they haven't been. They got a kicker. A good one.
Lou Groves a winner.
Yeah, they have not tried. There hasn't been a rating of rosters. So my hunch on this is what's happened is this is a very difficult time to transfer, especially if you want to transfer and play. You can transfer now and sit and learn and get it into an operation. So an example of this would be the young quarterbacks on the Buckeye roster. Obviously, five is a lot, and I don't know that they anticipated having five of them going into fall. As of now, none of them are in the portal. But if you are one of those young guys, if you left now, you could get into a system behind an established guy, have all of next fall to kind of be groomed, and then go from there. So, but if you're looking to come and play right away, it's not what I thought it was going to be, and I think what coaches are selling is this is a tough time to transfer in and out. So I do think it is the real truth. I think this one is much, much calmer than I anticipated.
Yeah, and I think the biggest takeaway for me is that it's the opposite of the sunk cost fallacy, because the idea is, I've poured so much into this. But that's not a reason to not give up on something or to pull away from it. But it does work in the inverse here that, you've put in so much work here at whichever school. We'll use Ohio State as the example. You've worked hard to learn their offense. You probably, unless you've been completely cast aside for some reason, you probably feel like, hey, I've gained some of the respect of the coaches. This probably might still be my best chance to go play, because if I transfer now, I'm going to have to go learn a whole new playbook. I'm going to have to learn how that all goes and figure out my way onto that depth chart. So I feel like running back, defensive line, and maybe wide receiver are the only ones that really kicker. We mentioned that. Guys, you can just plug and play. It's not, it's one of the easier positions to figure out what you need to do on the field. But quarterback, offensive line, linebacker, safety, Why would you learn a whole new thing over the last year, the last few months, the last two seasons, and then decide, hey, I'm going to go do that all over again and be somewhere on their depth chart? It doesn't really seem worth it. So I think we'll see that correction now, that the winter one will really be that crazy one. And perfect, because December continues to be a mess in college football.
Right? Yeah.
I think it is the real truth. I'm not sure figured out is the phrasing I would use. I think have a better handle.
Stabilized.
On it. Yeah, and I think we did have this. This was 2 years ago, I think, when the portal was crazy. It's like, it's going to settle down. Coaches, players, people advocating for players. Players, what was the phrase Urban loved to use, was the third uncle. They'll have a better sense of what the portal is, of a better sense of name, image, and likeness, and how it relates to the transfer portal. I think better advice will be given to a lot of these kids, and you'll start to see that not be as hectic once a new portal window opens. Like, will you ever figure it out? Because to your points about the college football calendar being awful, what happens when it changes? And you're going to have to get another handle on it, because it's just going to be a new window in a new spot.
It's just interesting that we're not seeing as much when that open transfer thing just like... I mean, it was already basically there because of the court case, but now it's an official rule.
I think you're going to need to see all the spring games before it really starts to... Before I think you can finalize your opinion on the spring portal.
The Southeastern Conference rule, which prohibits rating of each other's rosters without sitting, is a big part of this, because there are guys from Tennessee... There are guys in the portal, A&M, those type of guys are in the portal, but Bama can't get them.
How long until somebody sues the conference?
It's pretty amazing that that rule has, for now, superseded law.
Yeah.
Like, the Southeastern Conference rule has superseded the law.
So if somebody wants to challenge it, and SEC coaches are always looking for a way to get ahead. I know they usually row in the same direction down there, but somebody's going to challenge it now that, like, hey, you're breaking an NCAA rule and a law.
And a federal law.
Yeah.
Federal ruling.
Yeah, according to the ruling in West Virginia. J.J. McCarthy will go top five in Thursday's NFL draft. Is that the real truth?
I'm going to swerve here and say no. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say that he goes somewhere between... They had it on the poll yesterday. I think he goes somewhere between 6 and 10. I think it'll go 1, 2, 3... The quarterbacks off the top. Marv goes 4. And I think the Chargers would be the one to watch there. But my guess is, I guess a part of the reason I think that is, I just don't believe that Denver's in on quarterbacks this year. I think they're punting. So then the teams that could go get him would be Minnesota, Raiders. There's been some rumors about the Giants. I think maybe it'll just hold firm and he'll go somewhere between 6 and 10. That's against the common thinking, by the way. Most think he will be.
Yeah, I like your reasoning there, but I still think I am going to go with that being the real truth. That seems to be, during the silly season smoke screens, the one that has stayed there this entire time, that J.J. McCarthy was a true mover up this draft board for people as they really started to dive in and look at it. And I think if quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, somebody is going to get nervous enough and say, okay, we got to go get the next guy, because we think that this guy is in that realm of these type of quarterbacks. And if we don't, somebody else is going to do them. I just think seeing three straight quarterbacks, which is what it's likely going to be, is going to cause somebody to move up and probably overpay for it. Usually when you move up for a quarterback, we've seen in recent memory, it's not always perfect for you. And, you know, think about like Trey Lance and everything the 49ers gave up for him. But I do think somebody's going to do it. And Harbaugh would love to help out a team to draft his guy, because then he can talk about how great J.J. McCarthy is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's going 6 to the Giants.
So they just get to stay there.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
So Reese is going, not the real truth, but close.
Close.
This is like when he picks the Ohio State game on the half point.
And I've been largely right.
It's not about being right.
I would love it if he was there at 9 and the Bears took him.
Took him just like to hedge the bet. Just take all the quarterbacks.
That would be funny.
Draft them all. One of them's got to hit.
LeBron will never win another playoff round.
Yeah, bum.
Is that the real truth?
I think so, but I don't think it's his fault. He was sensational in the first two games. It's just, he is in, I've mentioned this before on the show, I just don't see any scenario how he can leave the Lakers. He's going to live in Los Angeles the rest of his life. He's going to want to be revered the way that, he's never going to be like Kobe or Magic, but he wants to be in that mix, Laker royalty. So can you bail on them? There's no way for them to really improve that roster unless they get lucky on a Austin Reeves situation again. And honestly, they need more than that.
Don't they still not have in the picks West until like 27 or 29 or something?
There's nothing. So it's like they have some picks, I think, in like 20. I don't know. It's well down the road. So there's no really way for them to improve because the way the salary cap is, they're totally paying Davis and LeBron so much that it's impossible for them to do much. So there'll always be these mid-level guys. And the rest of the West is just younger and better across the board. I mean, it's Denver right now. This was the one matchup that they obviously wanted least. But it's Denver. It's Minnesota. It's Oklahoma City. It's Sacramento. Like, all of those teams, New Orleans, they're all going to get better and better. And there's really no way for them to improve the roster. And I don't see a scenario where he leaves the Lakers. I just think he's stuck.
And I don't think they're going to be in a scenario where they're playing the back end of the West, because they are pretty steadfast in that idea. Like, we just want to get in and get in there because they have to rest. Right. They have to rest.
40.
And I think this year is a pretty good example of like, nah, that plan doesn't really work. Which the NBA is probably happy about.
Yeah. It's the real truth if he stays in Los Angeles. I saw an interesting report yesterday, and I guess if you can throw it on Twitter and you have a reputable website, anything can really be a report, that the Golden State Warriors are interested in acquiring LeBron for next season.
Wouldn't it seem more likely that
to Steph to Los Angeles?
That's what I was going to say.
Than LeBron to Golden State?
Or Clay. I mean, Clay's dad plays for the Lakers, so that would make some sense on a mid-level thing. Like, he could go play in L.A. It's just his dad played there, and I don't know. I just don't. But even if LeBron went to the Warriors, like, who's around him? So LeBron, Steph, a 40-year-old LeBron, a 36-year-old Steph, Draymond, Kuminga. Does that beat Denver in the first round? That team's not winning 60 games. Those guys all got old, man.
No, and they're not getting any younger either.
And they don't have Anthony Davis, by the way. They don't have Anthony Davis. I don't know. Yeah, no, and now, if he went back east, if he somehow went back to Miami or to the Cavs, okay. But I don't think that's in play. I think living in L.A. is where he's going to be, and I just think he can't turn his back on that with a bubble title, and that's it.
Yeah. I care about which city they hold the NFL draft in. Is that the real truth?
Jimmy Crack Corn, and I don't care. I think this is one of the most amazing things that the NFL has ever done is somehow 200,000 people in a city, a lot of times a northern city, sometimes the weather's not great, in late April or early May, watching a middle-aged man walk out on a stage and call a human's name.
For hours.
For hours. I think it's the craziest damn thing.
15 minutes in between each time.
Oh, my God. The experience is so much better on television, where you have the analysis. You know, I mean, this is an event that, in this instance, is literally made for TV. So it was made for TV. ESPN was like, hey, this is kind of, maybe we'll show this. Bring in Mel Kiper and his five landlines, and we're going to show it. And instead, they've convinced like 200,000 people to be in Detroit.
Yeah, I don't, because you used to see some fans at Radio City Music Hall, but it was mostly Jets fans, and that made sense. It wasn't that many people. It wasn't like this huge event, and that's why they're able to sell it, is because it's working for the cities. It's a great event to bring to your city. But no, unless it was in, like, if it was in Columbus, maybe I would check it out on like the Saturday just to see what the setup looked like. But I don't think I'd have that much interest even going to the first round and dealing with crowds like that on a weeknight. It doesn't matter to me. And honestly, the Detroit thing, I don't even like really look into where the draft is. Like, by the time it rolls around, I hear about it and I'm like, it's in Detroit, but like, I don't really care. The only thing that was ever cool was the boat that they were going to do in Vegas to bring the guys out on the stage. Because it was in the pandemic and it just never worked out. Yeah,
just stick with doing it at Radio City. Or just do it. I guess you could do it virtually now.
You know, it doesn't
matter. Do it at Goodell's house.
They did.
I know. Do that again.
Here's the deal. I like it from a television viewer standpoint. It adds some juice to it, but I don't understand it for the people who like go watch it. That's the part I don't get.
And that juice it adds, though, is not really contingent on which city. It's just that they've changed the environment that you see on television. No. Yeah.
All right. Coming up next, the most terrifying thing I've ever seen in an NBA game. Fishman Friends right here on The Fan.
We're known for three things: games, conversation, and common man yelling about things only he cares about. The Fan, Ohio sports destined. First Friday miracles are always better with Uncle Bo. This is Bishop and Friends.
Hey guys, it's Chops. After my initial consultation with Awaken 180 Weight Loss, I had one thought in mind. I could do this. After my first week losing 7 pounds, I thought, I am doing this. Every week, I found myself sticking to my plan and continuing to lose weight, but it was the goal at the end of it that helped me. So right now, if you signed up for Awaken 180, you could lose 40 by the 4th. Imagine that, 40 pounds less by Independence Day. If your scale reads 240 right now, hey, do the quick math. You can double check with me. That's 200. By the 4th, then you could join me, wear a Hawaiian shirt, crack a beer, have a burger, celebrate Independence Day with all of us. That could just be one phone call away. Awaken 180 at 844-346-1800 or reserve your consultation online at awaken180weightloss.com. Bishop and Friends, we're sponsored by Awaken 180. Fast, sustainable weight loss without medications. The solution for weight loss, Awaken 180 Weight Loss.
So I just retweeted this on the X. The Jokic brothers fought people last night. Like, have you guys seen them? Have you seen this video? So they're like bottom deck, about halfway up, and like they're going over rows to get their hands on people. And if you're curious, the Jokic brothers are all big. They're very big.
The one in the long sleeves is huge.
Terrifying.
He's got like, I don't know what kind of haircut that is, but it's definitely a unique haircut, and that always makes bigger guys, I think, more terrifying. And also, when you think of people going over rows to get in fights, it's usually more of like a stumble. Yeah. Now, these guys are more or less just stepping over it.
Yeah. On a list of most terrifying things you could see at a pro sports venue, I think that's it, right? If somehow you're in that harm's way. And then, furthermore, who would ever step to them? Who would ever incite them? Like, if they're in your section, don't you, even if you love the Lakers, I'm rooting for the Nuggets, man. Like, or I'm shutting up. I'm definitely not saying a word. I'm not looking in their direction.
Yeah.
Well, I just love the game.
It's the most formidable thing ever coming behind you.
Especially like if I don't know if the Jokic brothers just immediately went for it, or if they like even said something back, like maybe there were some comments made and maybe they you know, told the guy to shut up. Then you would definitely, you'd think you'd be able to shut up if you turned around and saw the guys who were saying you. It's, you know what you should do? Go to the concession stand, tell them, hey, the Jokic brothers actually said that they were going to pay for our meals today, and they actually put all this on there, and then just cruise on out of there. That was
great. That guy's Seabass.
It was a great scam. What happened? Oh, it was great. In the movie, they caught him about a half mile down the road and slit his throat. It was a good one.
Because these guys look tatted up, and I'm guessing half of what they're shouting is in Serbian.
Well, sure. And the other part of this is like,
have you seen Eastern Promises?
Yes. So, yes. Who's policing them? Their brothers, the franchise. Like, even in security, like, let's say you go to security and go, hey, these two giant Serbian white dudes with all the tats and the crazy hair, they're being really insensitive and they want to fight us. If you're Nugget security, you just go, so? Like, do they have to do with this all the time? Furthermore, like, does Jokic just have like a ranch in Denver where they all live and like have horses and it's just like a compound?
That would make sense. He loves his horses.
He does.
Is Jokic the only person there that can really take care of
this?
He's
the only one who could stop it.
Can you imagine those three brothers like wrestling growing up as kids?
No.
What that was like. They had to be out on a farm with some open space.
You got to have some room. You got to have some room to wrangle. That's the only way that you could do it. No, it's crazy. And I think probably entirely unpoliceable if you're Denver. Like, Jokic is probably, I don't even know if he cares, though. But if it's amazing. Like, just put him in a suite. Like, get him away from people. Or go courtside. But then they might fight a player. I don't know. What a mess. I saw Joel Klatt with this. I saw it in the Skull Session this morning. Joel Klatt put up he was talking about the Ohio State branding through the years, and he put up a graphic that had the four different predominant branding Ohio State has had through the years. So the first one is the Block O with kind of the old Buckeye leaf going through it, and they had that from 68 to 87. Then from 87 to 91, and this is the most 90s-looking graphic brand ever, is this one from 87 to 91. So it's like angled, and then it's got lines through it and kind of a, I guess, a modernized Buckeye leaf.
You'll see this one on like some homage type gear every once in a while now. Never that older one.
Mitchell and Ness sometimes will have that one too. The old one's awesome, but you never see it. I have one, I spoke for the, was it the Broward County Buckeye Club when they were down there playing the Orange Bowl? And I got a quarter zip with that one, with the old school one on it.
Okay.
That's pretty cool. And then they went to the one that's the Block O with the black script Buckeyes kind of across it, but it's like hollow. It's got like
the lines in the letters.
In the letters. And I was here when they went and they paid a lot of money to get it look like the way that it does now with just the solid letters. Wasn't much of a change. They just kind of filled in the lines. And that was kind of the extent of it.
I was in school when that one happened too. And I remember a friend of mine explaining, he's like, yeah, you know, they're changing the logo. And I was like, oh, really? And he's like, yeah, they're basically just coloring in the letters. And then it came out. And I was like, yeah, that is what happened.
That's exactly what happened. I've always been, I love the first one, and the 68 to 87 one, really cool with the leaf. But I'm also a little bit surprised that they don't just go with the Block O.
I wonder sometimes with that, because you've said that before, and I agree with you. Like, I think it could be just as iconic,
Alabama,
or maybe
A and all of that.
But
the Michigan M.
They usually serve there is a singular Block O logo, but it is meant for like the academic logos and the hospital logos and stuff. And I wonder if they just wanted to differentiate the two enough, where if you just went plain Block O, then those logos aren't different.
Why would they need to be?
I don't know, but they keep them.
You're
separate.
Probably right. You're probably right. But that would just be the simple thing. The other thing I don't know if it's an official logo or not, but the script Ohio is pretty great. Like that look is instantly recognizable. But just a simple gray O on a red background, or I guess scarlet O on a gray or black background with the opposite trim, feels perfect. I mean, anytime I see those hats, those are the ones I gravitate towards.
How many of the uniforms even have that logo with the Ohio State in it? Because they have like the Block O on that like
Hoops.
Chest piece and stuff.
Hoops has it that way. Yeah.
On the uniform?
Oh, the Block O?
That's what I mean. Like that collar? But I think it's gravy. Just the O when it's that. It's what Bo wants. But whenever it's singularly somewhere else, because obviously it's not like on the side of the football helmet. We all know that.
Right.
So they don't actually use it very much in the uniforms.
Right.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, they probably don't. The basketball has, I guess they have that arch thing that's just kind of the arched Ohio State.
Yeah.
So they took the middle out, and they just put that on the front of the uniforms there. Curious what Jake does with that going forward, if he mixes up, you know, kind of the look of the operation there.
Yeah, you're right. The basketball jerseys, it's basically they just took the O out, and it just goes across. It's in the same form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. I think the old one's the coolest, the 68 to 97. That's the one I like the best. But I also understand why you wouldn't want that all over everything with that giant leaf across it. Little Tuesdays with DeBerry coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Matty Ice has a large tattoo on his calf of LeBron eating a lion.
I have nothing else to say.
Rothman and Ice.
Weekdays from noon to 3.
The Fan.
Us.
Bishop and Friends present Tuesdays with DeBerry.
Sponsored by Sears Heating and Cooling. Family owned since 1950.
It is a Tuesday. Time to check in with our good Uncle Dom. And, buddy, you know, you and I have talked privately, and you put it out on social as well. Obviously, the condolences for the loss of your mom, who was just an angel. Anytime I saw her and everybody, Big Lou, the whole family, it's obviously a brutal time, but she was such a sweet, sweet lady and such an awesome presence in your family, my friend.
Yeah, it feels weird, Bo. You know, she's been my mom 65 years, and I don't have to tell you. You know what it's like. You lost your beautiful mom, and you know, I'm just happy that you know. I think she felt the love. We were all there. It was the hardest thing I ever had to do is, you know, watch that happen. Obviously, losing our daughter Maria was just terrible. But I just want to say thank you to the whole community out there. The outpouring of love for me and my family was very special. And you know, the funeral was yesterday. It was very beautiful. I'm going back to work today. I got to get some normalcy.
Yeah.
But it's hard on Big Lou. My dad was married to her 65 years, and you know, it's going to be hard for him. It's you know, I did the eulogy, my nephew and I did, and I said, you know, my mom lived for her kids, lived for her grandkids, and her great grandkids, and she was the matriarch, and everything was family, and the hospital probably thought we were a little crazy, but there was 20 some of us in the room with her, and we were all there. Great grandkids, and all of her children, and we were all there with her.
As you're talking, I was thinking back to all the interactions that I would have with. I don't recall Big Lou and your mom ever one of them being there and not both. And anything that you did at your house, they were both there. I mean, when we would do wall to wall sport on the Super Bowl back in the day, like they'd be there at that. They were omnipresent.
Well, that's the one thing I could say. As kids growing up, and I talked about this in the eulogy, it started with us. My brother Lou and Rich and my sister Susan, they found a way to be at everything. My dad worked third trick on the railroad, so he could come to everything during the day. He could be at all of our sporting events and everything. And that continued with our grandkids. They never missed a baseball game. I don't know how they did it. They were at everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I talked about, how we were very, very lucky because our parents never missed a thing.
Well, it's certainly all of us send our best. And you've lived such a public life when you do what you've done for so long in this town. And with that comes, I've always felt like this, and it, obviously the tragedy with Maria, like this area, you put its arms around this area, and this area put its arms around you. It's been a remarkable thing through the years to watch from my vantage point, and I know how loved you are, obviously feel by this community.
Well, it's funny because yesterday my mom, and I said in the eulogy, she had made worrying a national pastime. She worried like no person I ever met. And I said, unfortunately, that trait was passed down to me, and I apologized to my kids yesterday, Dominic and Kelsey and his wife, Michaela, and Kelsey's wife, Taj. I apologized because I said, I have that trait. And so when I call and ask questions and what's going on, are you guys okay? I said, that's the trait. And I said, it's kind of like what I tell the kids when I do Maria's message. I've been to 159 schools. I was supposed to do my 160th a week ago, but we lost mom and I couldn't go. But it's like I tell the kids, I tell them, if your parents want to know where you've been, what you've been doing, who you're hanging with, what time you're going to be home. If they're in your business, what they're really saying to you is that they love you.
Mm-hmm.
And, sometimes the word no means I love you. And I said, I'm sorry that I got that trait, but I get it naturally from my mom, grandma. So sorry, guys. But yeah. I am. I'm a warrior. But you know what? I think all parents are, right, Bo?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's funny you said that. I had that conversation with my oldest, who's now 12, and we were talking about, it's some frivolous nonsense or something he wants or something that he wants to do, and I'll say no. And he goes, why do you always say no to everything? And I said, you got to understand that that I'm only going to worry about you forever. And then you also have to understand that I have no real interest in being your friend at this age. I love you to death, but I'm your parent. And I'm seeing things. Yeah. I'm trying to prevent things that can happen because I've lived it. So I'm trying to prevent you from making a mistake that I can see coming or a behavior that I can see coming. And sometimes you're not really going to like what I say to you, but understand that at the bottom of it, it's just all love, man. I mean, that's it.
Yep. That's what it is. And it was, I don't like funerals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but it was a celebration for mom yesterday and just the love that everybody had. And, I know this much. She's back with our little Maria. She missed her so bad. So, it's going to be weird. It was weird last night. I had to go. We haven't gone grocery shopping or anything for a week. And T, my wife, said, can you get something? So I ran to the store, and the advertisement was, don't forget to get your Mother's Day gift.
Right.
And I just, and it just kind of hit me, you know?
There will be those moments, as you know, that's when it'll really hit home. It's interesting you said there, and you said, get back to work. I need some normalcy. That's one thing when you take a further step out of it. And I've always felt this way about what we do, and then certainly what we get to talk about, right? I mean, we talk about sports. It's frivolous nonsense in the grand scheme of things. But it can provide a hell of a distraction. And I do think that is one of the great healing things that are out there with sports. Is it really whatever is going on previously or otherwise? Yes, in the big scheme of things, it's frivolous. But sports, in the end, provides a hell of a distraction for everybody, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think we all need to keep that in perspective. I know sometimes people get upset when Ohio State will lose to Michigan and whatever. And, you know, I tell people sometimes, I say, you know, there are more important things than sports. But sports is entertainment. Mm-hmm. It's a distraction. It's to take our mind off of it. And when it becomes all-encompassing and the only thing that matters to you, maybe you need to get another hobby because it's supposed to be just a distraction.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what it can be. Well, listen, buddy, I know that you'll be back on the air at Channel 10 tonight. You know, we love you. The community loves you. Everybody grieves with you, and look forward to seeing you tonight on Channel 10.
Thanks, Bo. I love you, and I love everybody out there. Thank you for all the support. And, I ended the eulogy by saying, because my dad said my mom never lost an argument, and she was always right. And she would always critique his driving, how bad he was. And he started this thing. He would just go, oh, Batty. And it was so at the end of the eulogy, I said, can everyone in the church at the count of three give my mom a proper salute? Can we get an oh, Betty? And so we did an oh, Betty. So for all of you out there, oh, Betty.
Oh, so, Betty. That's great. Yeah. Big Lou. That's great. All right, brother. Love you, pal.
See you, buddy. Love you.
All right. That's Dom DeBerry, Channel 10 legend, obviously, and joining us on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We're the girthiest radio station in the history of radio.
Uncomfortably girthy.
This promo is uncomfortable.
The Fan, Ohio's girth destined.
After putting up with Dom DeBerry for a decade, the broadcast gods gave Bo these two. This is Bishop and Friends.
Indeed it is. Time for a little thing or not a thing on a Tuesday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Apex Plumbing Pros.
First one up here today from CBS Sports. J.J. Redick will interview for the head coaching job of the Charlotte Hornets, according to the Athletic Sham Sharania. Redick, a 16-year NBA veteran, has no professional or collegiate coaching experience at any level. Since retiring from the NBA in 2021, Redick has been a broadcaster at ESPN. He calls games for the network, appears on studio shows, and has hosted podcasts. In addition to his own podcast, The Old Man and the Three, he also co-hosts a new podcast with Los Angeles Lakers star LeBron James called Mind the Game. Redick was considered a high IQ player during his lengthy NBA career, and he has drawn praise for his media work. He is known for his willingness to break down the game's X's and O's and tries to steer on-air conversations in that direction. While he has not taken an assistant job, Celtics coach Joe Mazzulla tried to hire him for one last offseason. He also interviewed with the Toronto Raptors for their head coaching job last year. Thing or not a thing?
I think it's a stupid thing that people are making a big deal about this, about like how could you possibly hire J.J. Redick? He's got a master's degree in basketball. Right? This is the last four head coaches for the Charlotte Hornets. Okay? Mike Dunlop, Steve Clifford twice, two separate times from 14 to 18. Actually, he did it from 13 to 14, then 14 to 18, then 22 to 24, and then James Borrego. You telling me J.J. Redick can't coach basketball? Like, there was a time when there was like a pecking order here. That's long gone. I'm pretty sure Jason Kidd went right into coaching. Steve Nash went right into coaching. Mark
Kidd
Jackson.
Did all right. Nash, not so much.
I mean, Kidd coached the Nets to the finals.
He's got the Mavericks now.
Yeah. Steve Kerr went out of the booth to coaching. Why can't J.J. Redick coach?
Yeah, this isn't a thing. I think he's respected enough in NBA circles where this is what happens, where you've got general managers and basketball presidents saying that we need a guy who's well-versed in basketball. And Bo, as you just said, he's got a PhD in the damn thing.
Come on.
So I don't think there's any reason to believe that he wouldn't be an optimal candidate. Would he be a good coach? Who knows? Because he's never done it. But it can't be any worse.
No.
And after what Bo laid out, it's like, why not?
There are some teams where it's like, yeah, what the hell? Try anything.
All right. Honestly, how many NBA coaches do you think you could name off the top of your head? Like, truly.
Probably less than 10.
Less than half, probably.
Yeah. And attach them to the right team also. Like, because I knew Jason Kidd was still coaching, but I couldn't remember for sure that it was still the Mavs.
I forgot.
He's been at three places, right? He was at the Nets and the Wolves and then the Mavs, I think.
Sure. I remember at the Nets. I don't know.
Probably do the coaches in the playoffs right now. I forgot Darvin Ham was with the Lakers. I still thought it, for some reason, last night was Frank Vogel. It's not, the way.
Not.
So I'm usually out, to borrow a phrase, on anything Tom Brady does, podcasty or interviewee, because it's Tom Brady. And not a whole lot interests me what he does. Like, I'm going to be out on this Netflix roasty thing in 2 weeks that's going to be live and uncensored. Like, I'll catch it if it's fun when they aggregate stuff online. This is more of that. He was on that Deep Cut podcast where he's getting his hair cut by a guy.
Right. Yeah.
And he talked about a bunch of different things. But this comment he makes seems to be focused on the problem he's got with younger players in today's NFL.
And I think the biggest problem with a lot of kids these days is all about them. It's all about them, their brand, their social media. And then when it's about me and then not about us, well, there's no way to succeed as a team if all you're doing is thinking about how selfish it is for you to get attention.
It's cool to show the world how great you are. But the most inspiring thing is how great you can make others.
That's the point of life, is what we could do. How do you help other people finish the race, not just you?
It's a beautiful thing or not a thing.
So what's interesting is Tom Brady, the New England Patriots player, lived this. He was not bigger than the team. He took less for years. He never forced them to pay as much as his value was. And they won a lot in large part because of it. What Tom Brady is now is all of this. He's all about the brand. Like, you could go to his web TB12 and Brady hoodies and, you know, the whole thing. So it's like, what he is now doesn't mesh up with what he was as a player. And I also think it comes across like very get off my lawn that all of these guys are this way, and that probably not. By the way, he's on social all the time. What's a guy that has done all of this? He will talk to anybody. He can't wait to do an Instagram post. He can't wait to
push his brand. He did the second episode of this Deep Cuts thing, and we're all like, what is this? Tom Brady's getting a haircut. Bo, you're right about that for a long part of his career, but there was a little bit of like brackish water between where he is now and his career, because remember he had the stuff with he wanted his own personal trainer, and the Patriots said to be like, that guy can't be in there. And then TB12 was obviously started in there. So he got there. But at that point also, he was Tom Brady. He wasn't just an NFL player. So I hear what he's saying, but I don't think he needs to call them these blanking kids. That's probably a little bit too far. And also, remember, when you are the elder statesman and you just left the league, you guys built this league to be this way, to be about self-promoting and to be about doing these kind of things, and then handed it off to these guys. I hate it when people put it on the kids, that, like the transfer portal and NIL. Like, that's the players' fault.
Yeah,
no, the adults made the leagues and the organizations this way. So, you know, you have a lot of power, Tom Brady. Change it. Figure something out. You know, to try to do something proactive instead of just complaining about the young guys. Yeah. That's what everybody does after they retire. Friend of the program, Bill Connolly, recently compared mega blue bloods, which he listed as Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Michigan, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Penn State, and Texas, obviously in alphabetical order there. There are 9 college football programs that have averaged at least 12.5 SP plus ratings since World War II. Those 9 just enjoyed their best collective season. Their 9 best seasons, 1971 to 74, so for some reason, the early 70s, they're really good. Then 2017 to 19, pandemic happens, then 22, 23 this past year. How do those numbers rate? Oklahoma has the best SP plus, that's his metric, at 17.6 since World War II. Ohio State is third on that list at 14.7. But for example, the top five SP plus teams in 2023 were Michigan at 31.3, Georgia at 31.2, Oregon 26.2, Buckeyes 25.2, and Penn State 23.5. So you can see that the numbers are have steadily risen over the years. Thing or not a thing?
So I think it's interesting that he uses World War II, because if there's that before Woody, like if you were to, what I think would have been interesting, like if you took this from Woody Hayes's hire, I would bet you Ohio State would be number one. Because the other thing that happens here is you have Oklahoma has the Bud Wilkinson era where they have, that's in the 50s, where they go nuts. So Ohio State was kind of down. And then Woody happens, and then it goes. So that's, I think Ohio State, if you went from Woody Hayes on, or like let's say you change the war that you're going to use as the starting metric to Vietnam, my hunch is that it would be Ohio State at the top of it. I also think what's interesting about this is nothing's really changed. Like, you know, you're talking about 80 years of history, and these are the teams that are good now that are good then. Do yourself, who has cracked this code a little, even? Is it Oregon? By the way, how does he not have USC as a mega blue blood? I just noticed that.
Well, maybe they didn't reach his numbers.
They could be out of that nine. I mean, there's the nine teams that are making the college football playoff, plus maybe an Oregon, plus maybe a group of five.
It's a thing. I would think USC would be in that mix.
Even teams that crack it, they can't stay there. Miami, Clemson, you know, they can't stay up there forever. Whereas these major blue bloods that he's talking about, yeah, have really been pretty consistent with a few. They have the blips of bad, these blue bloods, except for Ohio State, like you said, really since Woody, it's been great. But the other teams have the blips of greatness and can't quite stay there.
And I wonder, like, you were talking about changing the war to Vietnam. Maybe if you said since Desert Storm, would that include Clemson? Would that include Miami? Would that include Florida State on this?
Yeah, probably FSU. I mean, because that would, in Miami, you'd get two national titles with Miami. Yeah, I think the one, I'm surprised USC's not on this list. That's the one, because they've been predominantly good for a very, very long time too, but it's probably just goes a little back too far. Because if you did the Vietnam or you did since Woody, USC would be on the list for sure.
He did extend past for that final one where he was talking of that like chart I have in there. So I just want to see if USC.
Well, USC here, get that for us coming up next. Yeah. We'll figure out where USC is and who could crack this code. We got the NFL draft coming up on Thursday. Which team could most likely pull a Texans? We'll get to that as well. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Here's a listener tweet. Are Men and Bone stupid in real life? Yes. Yes, they are. Common Man and T-Bone.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
The Fan. Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat, because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a Tuesday. You'd mentioned in the Connolly piece this SP Plus, basically best team since World War II is the idea here. The order was Oklahoma, Alabama, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Michigan, Penn State, Texas, Georgia, LSU. And as we were going through it, I said, where's USC? How could they not be in there? Where is it? Where is USC?
So he'd actually did six more teams after that. He didn't give us the full list. It's a screenshot. But Tennessee is next after LSU at 12.1, then USC at 12. Florida 11.6, Florida State 11.1, Miami and Nebraska both at 10.1. So that's where you see those teams that have reached that pinnacle and been the best for periods of time, but have also had periods of drop-off, it looks like.
USC football record by year, because they have been ridiculous. Really, and I'm just, it had to be like the 50s had to do them in. All right, since World War... Okay, so that's it. So the back half of the 40s and the 50s. So it's really not until John McKay. So if you did the thing that I was saying, John McKay gets there in 1960. Before that, it's really meandering. John McKay gets there in 1960, and then we're off. So if you apply the same thing that I said to Ohio State to USC, USC would be way up there on this.
Next time we talk to Bill, we'll have to ask him, hey, can you do this from 1960 instead?
Change your wars, Bill. And then you'd get it done. Go World War. To me, that it does kind of, when you think about the Mount Rushmore programs or Cadillac programs, if you stay with the Mount Rushmore model, to me, it's Oklahoma, Alabama, Ohio State, and USC. And, you know, you get people at, whether it be Michigan or Notre Dame, everyone's going to be upset about that when you say something like that, but it's a consistent greatness. And that's also the recent greatness too, because you're talking about from 1960. That's a long time. You're talking 64 years now in that time. And I think sometimes with Notre Dame, there's too much credit given to what happened with Newt Rockne. You know, I mean, it's 100 years ago, man. Like that is, how does that even equate? To what they haven't won a national title since 88. Now they've played for two, but USC's won a boatload in the last 60 years. So
are there any teams that like you hold to that esteem that you ever get like the notion from, you know, when you're coaching or with your boys or anything that they like don't think of that as a good program at all?
Notre Dame.
Yeah. They're the one.
Where they're like, I mean, they don't understand the fascination with Notre Dame at all up until the last 2 years, Michigan.
Was USC in that boat until Caleb Williams won the Heisman?
Yeah, probably. I think I don't know that they were considered, you know, like under Clay Hilton, were they considered? I bet if you asked my kids like the four best jobs in the country, they'd say Georgia, LSU, Ohio State, Bama.
Yeah,
would probably be their answers to that. Would be those. But yeah, I mean, it's all we sometimes get. You know, they talk about recency bias. Sometimes when you talk about these things, there's a historical bias. And I think Notre Dame gets a lot of that where
sometimes it's the numbers.
Tim Brown, Brown the last Heisman winner at Notre Dame in 87?
I think so.
I think that's the last guy. I mean, yeah. I'm pretty sure that is.
But when you look at the amount of Heisman winners,
Johnny Lujack and it's the 1940s. I mean, it's a long time ago when they were, that preeminent thing. I think the other thing with this is, what I do think is very fascinating about this is that when you say about, all right, how are these programs tracking going forward? Every team on his list and the ones we're talking about are all really positioned nicely. This is SEC, SEC, Big Ten, Independent, Big Ten, Big Ten, SEC, SEC, SEC. USC is Big Ten. Tennessee is SEC. Who is the other one? Florida State. So Florida State's the first one that isn't affiliated with one of the two powerhouse conferences, and then Notre Dame's obviously independent.
Florida's one spot ahead of Florida State. Yeah.
Okay. And Miami. So you have to go Miami, Florida State. Like they're the ones on the outside looking in. The thing that's going to be fascinating here over the next, is it 5 years? Is Notre Dame, can you at some point make the argument? Will someone at some point make the argument? And I know Gene Smith has made this argument that Notre Dame would actually be better off in a conference, that it would be more financially viable for them, that it would also be something that from an exposure standpoint, they would benefit from even more. Because when you ask that question about which programs do my boys think of differently than I do, or certainly than people my dad's age would, they're the top answer for that would absolutely be Notre Dame.
Yeah, and I think Notre Dame, yes, the independent structure has really helped them in the BCS era and in the 4-team college football playoff era. I think there's still going to be a team that perennial will make the 12-team field, but I don't think that's being helped out by independents or whether or not they were in a conference. No, I think their level irrelevant. Of program would be a team that could make the 12-team field just about every year, regardless of what they're doing. And then you're talking about sometimes it might work out monetarily for them, or they might think it. A lot less work when you're not doing it independently. Big Indiana doesn't put in a lot of work and go to a lot of meetings to get their payout.
No.
And they get more than you.
No. And in the lesser revenue sports, it would be so easy to be in the Big Ten and to play around here and not have to travel.
They're in Big Ten hockey. They're already doing one sport.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they will be, you know, if there is future expansion change, they would be the catalyst for it. And does there come a point where they just say, you know what? We're better off here. We're better off in this league. We can still play USC. We can still play Oregon, Washington, play everybody we want to play. Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, all the teams we play. And we just do them as conference games.
Well, because football independence isn't really a thing anymore. The only other teams that do it out of like just dire need that nobody else wants them in their conference. Like UMass has been it. Connecticut was, but that's because they wanted to join the Big East in basketball. It didn't really have to do with we want to be independent. It's not really a part of the environment in college football anymore, and yet Notre Dame still is.
No,
I wonder with Reese. The Irish, like, what would it take? It's got to take something. Like, there's got to be a a catalyst to push the Irish into a football conference. Like, they wouldn't just be, oh yeah, you know, we've looked at it and we've seen all your presentations and that the conference does interest us. Like, they would have to be, it would have to be something that they would perceive as being robbed.
I mean, typically my brain goes to money. Like, and right now they just got that last deal. And so they're within the margins.
They're good.
Yeah, they're within the margins on what the Big Ten teams are going to make.
Playoff access is really the last thing. And they keep getting sweetheart deals with that.
They do. So I think that, and I think the reason they get those sweetheart deals is because I do think there's a chance that, I don't know if the SEC would want, I think they would take Notre Dame. I don't think they would say no. But my hunch is that one of them want to make sure that there's a comfortable landing spot for them at some point, because they are kind of the last television cash cow that's out there. There's nothing else from a rating standpoint that's out there. It's really just Notre Dame that continues to drive. So that's probably it. And I guess it's the exclusivity. So if there ever gets to a point where the SEC and the Big Ten say, we're going to do our own thing and we don't need any of you, that would probably be the catalyst. Would be, if you're not in these two conferences, the SEC and the Big Ten basically run a National College Football League, and they say, we're going to play our own playoff, and then our teams are going to meet for the championship. And at that point, Notre Dame would have to say, okay, are we going to play Oklahoma State and Clemson and Florida State and these teams, or are we going to, we want to be in this group. We don't want to miss out on this. So to me, that would, as we're just fleshing this out, that would seem to be the one that would make it possible.
They've just been, yeah, because everything else, all the changes, they've been so steadfast that independence is so important to them. And that new president, Bivacqua, he comes in, and that was like the first thing he had to say was that, like, being independent is very important for our football program, and they are so attached to it. And I don't know, like, what do they really feel like, besides money that we're talking about and having nice television deals, but you can make more money in the Big Ten right now. I don't know what they feel like they get out of it. Like, why do they like it so much? Is it just, just being different? We don't need a conference. We're Notre Dame, I guess.
Okay, so here, there's one other thing that would force this, other than the national college football model, and that would be the two conferences not playing them.
We've talked about that one before.
Yeah, and here it is. So I'm looking, like, here's their schedule for next year. They, by the way, have a very cool graphic on their website where they show, like, license plates in terms of where the games are going to take place. So they open against Texas A&M, probably in Dallas is my guess. So they're at A&M to start, Northern Illinois, at Purdue, Miami, Ohio, Louisville, Stanford, Georgia. I mean, that's a brutal stretch. Louisville, Stanford, Georgia Tech, Navy, Florida State, Virginia, Army, USC. So they only play this year three Big Ten or SEC teams. So if you're a Notre Dame alumnus, are you happy playing Virginia, Stanford they would be, Georgia Tech, Louisville, FSU, or would you rather play Ohio State, Michigan, Oregon, Indiana, Michigan State? That's it. That's going to be the thing that breaks them, is if there's ever a point where they just don't want to play all these ACC teams every year.
Just, it's going back to what you're first saying. Texas A&M, that is at Kyle Field. That's down there in Aggieland.
At Aggieland?
That's what it says. Kyle Field, TBD for time, but August 31st, 2024, College Station.
To answer your question, they feel like Penn State, and they're like, no, we're good. We're good in our regular season schedule right now, so long as winning a majority or all of the games in that allows us a shot at the playoff. And then we get a week off because we don't have to play a conference championship game.
There is a little protection to not be proven wrong and maybe, like, be knocked down a peg, where if you join the Big Ten and, like, can't get through and you're not going to the Big Ten title game, or you're not winning the Big Ten, even, like, I wonder if that's something that they feel like they're always seen at the top. Every year Notre Dame's basically in the top 10 at the beginning of the season, kind of regardless of where you actually think they're going to be. And they probably have an idea, I would think, that independence, because I have this idea, their independent status does preserve that for them.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Just
it does.
People, you know, holding them to a higher esteem than maybe what they've deserved over the last 20 years. But they are still a good program. That's why I think the 12-team playoff is going to be really interesting for how they react once they get a few years into this and see that, okay, we can make this, but if we join a conference, we could get that bye. That's the other thing. That's the one time they finally got something taken from them, is the bye is not available to them because they can't be a conference champion.
Yeah, Yeah, it'll be the exclusivity. That would be it. If you just say we're not going to play you, that would be it. Notre Dame, the university, has a lot of money. Notre Dame, the athletic department. Those are two separate instances. But it so initially it'll be about the money, but then inevitably about the exclusivity. That's what it'll be. If the Big Ten and the SEC say, yeah, you're out. That's the way that it would go. NFL draft set for tomorrow. By the way, the Texans' new uniforms have leaked. I would imagine their fan base is not going to be thrilled with one thing that they didn't do here. We will get to that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Big Voice Guy here to remind you that you're listening to The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Okay, thanks. I have three more seconds. If you say something with enough confidence, it must be true. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Indeed you are. Heard a lot about how treating low testosterone can improve your sleep. It has for me. Your workouts, absolutely. Energy levels, yeah. I want to talk about your sex drive, though, because low testosterone can have a significant impact on your desire for intimacy. It can be a factor in erectile dysfunction as well. If you're in a relationship or wanting to be in a relationship, a low sex drive could really be a problem for you. And if any of these factors are something that checks a box for you, I want you to see my great friends at Tri-State Men's Health. Here's what I want you to do. You go to tristatemenshealth.com, take the low T quiz on the website. If the symptoms apply, schedule a consult with Tri-State Men's Health. They're going to do your lab work. They're going to be results in about 30 minutes. I went through the process. Couldn't have been happier about how easy it was, how discreet it was. Licensed medical provider is going to review your results with you, discuss your options, and then you're going to make the decision together with the medical team. The cost of the appointment, $99. That includes the consult, the T, and PSA test. If you sign up like I did, your appointment is free. Four offices, including two here in town. Call them today, 800-900-9654, or visit tristatemenshealth.com. I think my favorite thing to do here when NFL teams drop jerseys, so the Houston did, and they're not going to have a light blue one, which is a bit of a shame. But the I got to tell you, like, it's a, at least this one is a little mixed. It's not quite as bad as the Broncos was yesterday.
Because they don't have a classic uniform for people to fall back on.
Yeah, you said it. The one that they have, they can't use because it's the Oilers. There is a good mix of, good Lord, they're terrible. I'm going to have an H-Town jersey now. Holy mid. So this guy's obviously my kid. Battle red. They basically just use the light blue as a pinstriping. That's about it. The one thing that's pretty odd is there's no uniformity. So they went with like a new template on the away one with like a horns on the sleeves, but then they just kept the home jersey exactly the same.
Like, yeah, it's got the Texans just logo on the shoulder, whereas yeah, you're right, the exactly white jersey has the horns.
And then the red one doesn't have the horns either. It just randomly has striping. And then the H-Town blue isn't H-Town blue. It's just navy blue with a little bit of light blue accent.
Now the red does have a bit of a chrome dome thing going on at the helmet, and it's the horn instead of that Texans logo. Now that one, I think, like, I don't see that and think Texans right away. It would take time to get used to it, but if people get used to it, I actually kind of like that one. I think that's kind of cool. I think it's cooler than their logo. I don't care about the Texans logo. I don't think it's very good.
No, their branding's always been pretty brutal. The horns might maybe just do the horns and make that your primary look.
Yeah, Viking style, but with the horns. Yeah.
The red and white look like Cincinnati, the Bearcats.
University of Cincinnati, yeah.
I know it's blue, but is it blue or is it black on the white?
It's blue, really dark blue.
Very dark blue.
The red one looks kind of like Louisville has a chrome red,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
The H-Town one, I mean, they'd been promising like a light blue jersey, but Houston must own the color in the NFL. I don't know how. But they must, because all it is
accents. How can they own all of light blue?
They own all of light blue because they have to. There's no other way to explain it. They basically just use the light blue as like pinstriping and a little bit in the H on the helmet.
Are there just not enough available? Do the Chargers own a light blue and the Lions own a light blue and the Panthers own a light blue, and then you have the Houston Oilers light blue, and then is there not enough options? But it still feels like you could just come up with a shade that works.
Yes.
The away ones also, the navy is very dark. Almost
black.
Yeah, almost black, especially on the black jersey part of it. Yeah.
That's what I said. Like, there's no uniformity to the uniform. It is four separate, distinct, entirely different uniforms. None of them look the same. Even simple piping and striping and logos, they're all different.
Yeah, they're not like inverses of each other, just with a different primary color. Yeah.
No. But I think you're right. They don't have an old one to fall back on, so this is kind of what you get. NFL draft is coming up. The CJ Stroud, the one to get in him, would it be the red one? I think the white is pretty cool. That'd be the, like, If I were to get the boys a CJ Stroud, it would probably be the white one with the horns on the sleeve. I don't like my kids would probably like the H-Town blue one.
Yeah,
that's my guess.
Is the H-Town one, the back of the H-Town one's kind of cool. It has the H on the back. I like the numbers, and then that's where you really can see some of that light blue. I feel like on the back of it, there's one picture they got here where it's the back, but the front, I don't know if the front does it for me.
No, no.
They've got a uniform release party happening tonight. Paul Wall's going to be performing.
I bet my kids would know who that is. By the way, I wonder how the Broncos.
No, they would have no idea who Paul Wall is.
Oh, they don't?
Our age group is the one who would know who Paul Wall is.
Okay. I don't know who that is. The Broncos did a uniform release party yesterday, and I'm curious if that was Crickets. Did anybody show up?
They also had a playoff game that night, too, for people who are sports fans in that town. Did they try to combine it with that? Did they do it before the playoff game? That would help.
Yeah. And by the way, the Nuggets wore those 5280. Like, I didn't know the entire city of Denver was just, that's the whole thing, was 5280.
How many people do you think know that fact? Like, how many people do you
now
think?
Now a lot.
Yeah.
It's now probably.
But like, yeah, like an average person, they see 5,280 on the court in Denver and like immediately know what that means.
No.
And can connect the dots.
I wouldn't think so. Some NFL team will attempt to do, or hope to do, I should say. I don't know if anyone is audacious enough to hope to do it, but you hope to do something like this, and that is flip it the way the Texans did. So the Texans were bold a year ago, and they were able to get both their franchise quarterback and a franchise defensive end back-to-back, second and third overall. This draft this year provides the ability for teams to be incredibly nimble and pull off something similar. Looking at you, Chicago Bears, they would be the obvious choice to be able to do this. If they hit on Caleb Williams, they pick at 1 and 9, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have the ability to get two dudes in the top 10 picks to a roster. And this is the thing that the Bears are even a better situation than the Texans are. They have Keenan Allen. They have DJ Moore. They've got a pretty good defense. They can run it. They just signed DeAndre Swift. They're far more fully formed now than the Texans were a year ago. The Texans, the difference, the one thing I will say the Texans did very right, though, is they landed their coach. And when you think back to the Bears offseason and everything they did, and they played it all pretty well, probably waited too long to try to get something for Justin Fields. And then that ended up being not much of anything. But the idea that they kept Eberflus kind of hangs over this. If they had gone new guy right now, then you could walk into this new era pretty wide open and potentially have it, because D'Amico Ryans was a star as a coach. And that is something that you have to talk about when you think about what Houston could do. But this is what teams are dreaming of. I think Arizona could have a weekend like that because they're sitting there at 4 and there's an opportunity for them to do a lot of things.
They've also got 27 and 35 to play around with in a trade.
That's a lot of toys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a lot of toys for them to play around with on this thing. So
For the Bears, is 9 good enough, or do you think that to really have that idea of like completely change your franchise, would they have to trade up to 5, 6?
I don't think so. I think they can hang because I think, you know, like could Roma Dunsie fall to 9?
Brock Bowers.
Like, see, that would
do it,
right?
They'll have weapons at 9.
They've got Cole Kmet. Like, if my hunch is either Bowers or Dunsie. Now, they have Cole Kmet, but that, I mean, just accumulate weapons. Either Bowers or Dunsie would be at 9, wouldn't they?
I would think. So. I mean, if you're throwing out two of
six
them,
quarterbacks,
they have to be one of them.
The Titans are probably going to be taking a tackle, whether it's Fashanu or Alt. I don't see the Falcons doing anything.
Falcons could be a trade
offensively,
out spot.
Right? Or take a defender there, like a tackle. Yeah.
And they would actually be really helped out by the fact if somebody does jump up and use one of those picks in front of 9 for a quarterback, because they're not interested in drafting a quarterback. They're picking them number 1.
No. No, they're the logical one that you look at and you say they could flip this thing in a hurry. Now, historically, the Bears have failed miserably at this. Quarterbacks, drafting, running backs, receivers, all of this. And they've failed at all this over and over. About all they can do is land defensive players. But they're in a position to where they could be very good in a very, very short order, especially if Caleb Williams is great. We'll ask Max Chadwick, PFF college football analyst, how great can Caleb Williams be? We'll get into that. He also have a little bit of fun with his mock draft simulator. That's coming up next. Bishop and Friends are here on The Fan.
Question from a listener. Do you dopes ever get tired of talking about Ohio State? No. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
The Fuss. With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, let's head on to the Bryan Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Conversation friend of the program, Max Chadwick, PFF College Football Analyst, co-host of the PFF College Football Show, and of course, PFF's Mock Draft Simulator, which is pure joy for everybody. Max, thank you so much for taking the time. I guess let's start here. We know quarterbacks are going to dominate the first few picks. How do you have them rated?
Yeah. Hey, guys, thanks for having me on again. And yeah, I would probably say Caleb Williams, I think, is in a pretty clear tier of his own as the number one guy, and he's going to be the number one overall pick. And then actually my number two quarterback is a guy that I don't think will be the number two overall pick, and that is Drake May from North Carolina. I think right now Jaden Daniels is the favorite to go to Washington, but I think Drake May is a better player than Jaden Daniels is right now. I think he's got more arm talent. He elevated the supporting cast at North Carolina, whereas Jaden Daniels played in a great environment at LSU. I think Drake May I just trust a little bit more than Jaden Daniels right now. So I have him number two. I have Jaden Daniels number three. Then I would put JJ McCarthy number four, Michael Penix Jr. number five, and Bo Nix rounding it out at number six.
So you have the gap you mentioned, Caleb in his own tier. Is there a second tier for those other guys, or is the gap, let's say, between Daniels and I think you had McCarthy four, relatively small?
I actually think the second tier is Drake May and Jaden Daniels. I think they're in their own tier as well. I think Drake May is a guy that I would take over Jaden Daniels pretty easily, but yeah, I think JJ McCarthy, Michael Penix Jr., Bo Nix, I put them all in a tier three or four, whatever you want to say. That's how I kind of tier it right now. So yeah, Caleb Williams in his own tier, Drake May and Jaden Daniels kind of in their own tier as well. And then I put JJ McCarthy, Michael Penix Jr., and Bo Nix in the last tier probably.
How do you account? It does feel like JJ is going to, it's somebody, could he go to as high as four? Maybe he, but it doesn't feel like he's getting out of the top 10. What do you make sense of his rise through this process? Where is it? Where are the holes in his game? And what is the difference? How big is the gap between him, let's say, and the guys you have in the clear two lane?
Yeah, so I think the difference between him and Drake May and Jaden Daniels and why I don't think JJ McCarthy is someone that I would put in that same tier is that Jaden Daniels and Drake May carried their offenses. JJ McCarthy never really had to do that at Michigan. I mean, look at that Penn State game, for example. Very close game throughout. He only attempted eight passes in that game and zero in the second half. So he's not a guy that he has really had to carry the offense, which kind of scares me when you talk about top five potentially for JJ McCarthy and handing the keys to an offense in NFL. That kind of scares me a little bit compared to some of the other guys. So look, the issue, I keep saying this, the issue isn't quality with JJ McCarthy. Like, he clearly has shown that he has the capability of making all the same plays that we see from Drake May and Jaden Daniels. But the issue is the quantity just isn't there. He hasn't done it enough for me to feel really good about him being a franchise quarterback in the NFL, whereas the other guys have done it enough, in my opinion. So that's why I'm a little hesitant on trading up into the top five or even top 10 to get JJ McCarthy. I'm a little hesitant on that just because the quantity of reps just really isn't there for him.
Max, how do you guys weigh supporting cast? The reason I bring this up is, we deal with this. I've talked to NFL GMs about this sometimes with Buckeye quarterbacks, right? Like, the supporting cast is so great. The receiving talent is so great. Do they have to make all of the small window throws? Conversely, you mentioned with Drake May, his supporting cast wasn't as great. He elevated it. So when you have a guy like Jaden Daniels, who played with elite skill players on the perimeter versus Drake May, how do you do that analysis?
Yeah, I think it matters for sure. I mean, you look at what Jaden Daniels had at LSU. I mean, you have Malik Nabers, who might be a top five pick on Thursday. Even Brian Thomas Jr., who's also going to be a first round pick as well. And then honestly, if you want to look at the next year's draft, Will Campbell, the left tackle, is going to be the top tackle in the draft, in my opinion. It might be a top five pick. And then also Emory Jones, the right tackle, also might be a first-round pick as well. So he really played in a very, very supportive environment. Now, granted, he was the best player in college football last year. I'm not taking that away from him. But you look at a guy like Drake May, who's younger, who's got more arm talent, and still graded out 90-plus, even playing in a supporting cast that wasn't nearly as good as it was at LSU. I don't think North Carolina did a really good job at all of surrounding Drake May with talent this past year. So, yeah, I think that's definitely something that you have to look at because you've seen some quarterbacks who've had unreal supporting cast in college just not really do as well in the NFL when their supporting cast aren't as good. So that's what holds me back a little bit about Jaden Daniels and why I feel better about Drake May is because we've seen Drake May play at an elite level even without a lot of talent surrounding him.
Talking to Max Chadwick, PFF college football analyst. Check out PFF's mock draft simulator. It's just fun. It's a lot of fun to have. Go on the site and check that one out. You mentioned Caleb, class of his own. You've been doing this for a little while. Where does he stand in the last 5 to 6 years, quarterbacks, for you?
Yeah, good question. I think if you look at, if you don't even go back to like the last decade and a half, I would say the only two that I probably say were better prospects than Caleb Williams were Trevor Lawrence back in 2021 and Andrew Luck in 2012. Those are probably the only two. I know Joe Burrow is probably up there as well with how unbelievable he was in his last year. But Caleb, man, I mean, he's been elite ever since his true freshman year at Oklahoma. He was elite there, won the Heisman Trophy as a sophomore, and still was an elite quarterback this past season. His defense has really kind of let him down. I think his arm talent is ridiculous. He might be the most creative quarterback I've ever seen come out of college. I don't think Mahomes' comparisons are that ridiculous in terms of play style. Now, am I saying he's going to be one of the greatest of all time like Mahomes has been so far? Maybe, probably not. But yeah, play style-wise, I certainly see it. So I think he's a guy that I'm so excited to see him in Chicago. And I think Chicago's done an amazing job of elevating the talent around Caleb Williams, that he's going to go in there. They might be able to make the playoffs immediately, like C.J. Stroud and the Texans did in his first year. I think that it's certainly in the cards for the Bears to also make the playoffs as a wild card team next year.
Let's do this exercise for a minute, if you will. Is there a quarterback in the last half decade or so that you felt very strongly about that was underdrafted and you were right about, and one that you were wrong about? Is there one that you missed on that you said, boy, I thought for sure this would work, and it just hasn't?
Yeah, I think the one that I would say is unfortunate that I was wrong about, I know this one's probably close to your hearts too, is Justin Fields. I really thought he was going to work out amazingly. He was such an accurate quarterback in college. And obviously an unbelievable runner as well. And he had 2+ years of elite production that I was like, oh, this is going to work in the NFL. The processing just wasn't there. And that really, you couldn't see it in the Ohio State offense because it really was like a one-read system. So it was almost like, okay, he hasn't really been asked to do it, but I don't know. I still think he's capable of it. Turns out in the NFL, he wasn't really capable of it. Like he really struggles with processing. That's why it's kind of held him back in his career. In terms of guys that I've been wrong about in terms of being lower on them, I think Josh Allen and Justin Herbert come to mind. Allen was this incredibly toolsy quarterback, but he was so raw. He's been one that really has hit his ceiling. And honestly, it's not a good way to look at other toolsy quarterbacks and say, oh, those be Josh Allen, because I think he's truly a one of one. The other one, Justin Herbert, I think I was wrong about him because I think Oregon put him, it was kind of fitting a square peg in a round hole. Oregon's offense was not designed well for Justin Herbert at all. And that kind of led to him not being a great quarterback at Oregon, but his tools in the NFL succeeded. And I think that was more because of Oregon holding him back than Herbert himself not being that good. So I think Justin Herbert and Josh Allen, those are two that I was wrong about that I wish I could go back and be a little bit higher on them.
It's crazy, this whole process, isn't it? Is from our vantage point, we finish this out with the Marv talk. Is he, you know, you talk to the guys around here, they say he's the best one that they've put out. Obviously, that's high praise considering who they put out recently. What do you make of Marvin? What do you think he will be right away? And what do you make of what he's done in this process where he's basically ignored all of it?
Yeah, you say the best one they put out. I might have to wait until 2027 because Jeremiah Smith might give him a run for his money. Look at how amazing that kid's been so far. But Marvin, I think Marvin's been outstanding, obviously. I think he might be a best receiver we've seen come out of college since maybe A.J. Green, Julio Jones in that draft. And if you even want to go further, maybe the Calvin Johnson – in 2007 when he came out. And obviously all three of those guys are probably Hall of Famers. So, I think Marvin Harrison Jr., I mean, you can see that he's the son of a Hall of Famer, one of the greatest receivers ever lived, not even because of his name, just because of the way he plays. His technique is unbelievable. He has everything you'd want in a receiver. The only thing going into the year that I thought he wasn't great at was yards after the catch and his after-catch ability, and he actually improved a lot in that this past year. So he really has no weaknesses in his game. He's a bona fide number one receiver the second he walks into the NFL. I am so excited. And I don't really care about him not testing at all, honestly. I mean, just watch the tape. I mean, the guy, you can tell he's an elite talent. I don't think it matters at all. Plus, you have GPS tracking. If you're worried about his speed for not running a 40, we've seen GPS tracking. He runs over 20 miles per hour consistently. So he's a very fast player. Got the size you want at 6'4". Literally everything you'd want. And even with a not great quarterback situation he had this past year with Kyle McCord there, I still thought was solid, but not a first-round talent like Stroud, Fields, and Haskins were. he's still produced at an elite level. So Marvin Harrison Jr., I think, is almost, I'm not going to say bust-proof because hopefully he stays healthy, but if he does stay healthy throughout his career, I have no reason to believe why he's not going to be one of the best receivers in the NFL.
Great stuff, Max. And by the way, the hype train on Jeremiah Smith is out of control. There are no brakes. It is a fully loaded freight. It is unstoppable at this point. So thank you for adding to that, my friend.
Of course. No, I can't wait for 2027. I think Jeremiah Smith, as a Penn State fan, I got to say it's super unfair you guys going from Marvin Harrison Jr. to Jeremiah Smith. Just save some for the rest of us, honestly.
That's right. Max, thanks for your time, man. Appreciate you.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that's Max Chadwick, PFF College Football Analyst, co-host of the PFF College Football Show. Check out PFF's Mock Draft Simulator. Have a little bit of fun there. We hit three things on a Tuesday. Up next, Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
We have so many local shows, I can't fit them in a 10-second promo. So let's just say we're live and local all damn day.
Keep your friends close
and your producers closer.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Hi, Reese, what are you on the poll?
Daily Fan Poll sponsored by ER Auto Care, masters of our craft. Today's Daily Fan Poll asks, how many games will the Cavaliers Magic playoff series go? 4, 5, 6, or 7 are the choices you have. 5's getting the most at 61%, 6 at 23%, 4, nice little sweep, 11%, and then 4% of you out there think it's going to go the distance.
I feel like the poll answers are just playing the percentages there. Just four. Like those are the most like it's kind of like an order of the most likely.
Yeah, it does. How about ours? How did ours end up?
So we'd asked earlier in the show, are you more interested in the NBA or NHL playoffs this year? There's about 160 votes to this thing. 53% said the NBA.
Close though.
Slight lead. Yeah, slight lead on that. Yeah, it's I enjoyed them both last night. The Sixers, I watched the Cavs, but that was over pretty quickly. I enjoyed the Sixers and the Knicks. Watched a little of the Lakers, but then I loved the Bruins and the Leafs. That was really fun as well. So it's nice to be able to bounce around a little bit. All right, three things on a Tuesday. Go ahead, boys.
One, two.
Three things.
Sponsored by Custom Air. Custom Air. Custom Solutions. Custom Comfort.
So a box shows up from Amazon yesterday, and in it is a bone broth. A bunch of boxes of bone broth. Now, I do 90% of the cooking around, and I just buy the bone broth if I need it. And so I asked my wife, I said, what's this about? And she said, well, the bone broth is for Buddy. And I went, okay, I'm not opposed to him eating bone broth, but why are we... She's like, well, I read it was good for him to mix it with his food.
Yeah.
It's quite steep on a price, on a per meal basis. This is where we're at.
Is it nicer than you, or at least the same things that you're eating?
Well, but my whole thing, I don't let him eat human food, so like it's... Now we do like the fresh pet and all this stuff, but like... Never stops, boys. Never stops.
I have a question for you guys. You guys, you like to be outdoors sometimes. Any tricks for getting fire smell out of your hair? Because this is something that I've just never been able to figure out. We had a bonfire on Saturday night when I was down there with my parents. I've washed it multiple times since then, and it just doesn't come out. And I know that I'll be washing it like Friday, and I'll still smell it.
Even
it, like,
now?
It like, yes, I have very thick hair, and yeah. It loves to stick onto it. Yes, my hair will smell like fire for a week after a bonfire.
Really? I've never heard of such. I was just going to say, just wash it, and that usually sorts it out. I've never heard of
that. Maybe I need to put like baking soda in it or something.
Huh. I always think is the squeeze worth the juice on it? And it always is. Like, yes. Bonfires are undefeated, but you do have to do all of the wardrobe change and all of that.
Yep.
Yeah, it comes out when it comes out, but
no trick.
It's absolutely worth doing a bonfire because bonfires are the best.
They are.
Been thinking a lot about YouTube lately for no real particular reason, but on this day, 19 years ago, April 23rd, 2005, the very first YouTube video was posted, me at the zoo.
All right, so here we are, one of the elephants. Cool thing about these guys is that they have really, really, really long fronts, and that's cool.
Boy, have we come a long way since then.
300 million views or something?
317 million views.
Wow. Is that the most? No.
It's
got to be billion hits, right?
Justin Bieber videos got more.
A lot of songs with tons of hits.
There was the one with Gangnam Style at one point.
Yeah.
Like it was in the billions. All right. Number two for me, I love the NFL draft. I love NFL draft week. I love Mel Kiper Jr. Absolutely love the man. He was on Pardon My Take this week and talked about the fact that he has no cell phone but five landlines. That's exactly what I want Mel Kiper to be. I don't want him to be, I want him to have the exact same haircut for 40 years. I want him to have landlines and no cell phones. I want him not on social media unless somebody posts it for him. This is what I want. By the way, on Thursday, I'm Kiper. That's my guy. Wherever he is, that's where I am. So I don't know if it's ABC, ESPN. I'm not sure which one they'll have him on, but that's where I'll be.
McShay, I think, also joined the Barstool guys, and he was talking, you know, he and Mel are still close, and he was talking, he's going with them this year for the draft. That's where he's
out at ESPN.
Yeah, he hasn't worked there for over a year.
A while, yeah.
Now, but he was saying that when he has to text Mel Kiper, he has to text Mel Kiper's wife, who then has to get to Mel and then hopefully get back to him in a timely manner.
So great.
Second one for me, it was good to see some Jackets fans out. There was a place holding a buy one, get one free deal yesterday if you wore a hockey jersey in honor of the NHL playoffs. But no free advertisement here, but we went because it's a place that we like. J-Lo had the alternate jersey on. There was a guy who gave her a head nod. He had the same jersey on. So not in the playoffs, but we can see at the restaurant. And luckily, no Penguins jerseys in the line, at least while I was there. Did see one Red Wings jersey.
So the boys on Rothman and Ice are going to have Howard Griffith on at 1:33. Mm-hmm. And in case you didn't hear the news, Dallin Hayden is, do we call him Louis or Versace? Like, what kind of luggage would Dallin Hayden be or need as he committed to Colorado yesterday?
Did he?
Yes.
Maybe, oh, good.
Maybe it's on the briefcase. Samsonite.
They've
I was way
off.
They've
got their spring game this Saturday, too.
I wonder if he'll play.
The Buffs do.
Try him out there and just see if he can go.
He's been training here.
I like that fit for him. I do think that they don't have enough weapons. They'll use him a lot and probably lean on him. Number three for me, this is something I haven't done and I can't tell you how long, but the Shogun finale's tonight and I can't have it wrecked. And I'm going to have to, I think, watch like commercial stuff on FX. I've been having to do this forever, but they don't drop it until midnight on the streaming.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't have it wrecked. So I think I'm watching a show with commercials tonight until probably like 11:30.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, sucks.
This, you know what does suck? Sometimes asking the internet a question is pointless because, no, I don't need 10 pounds of weight per foot on an outdoor umbrella anchor. It literally told me I needed a 90-pound base for a 9-foot umbrella, which is like the standard size one that you put in a table. Now, maybe the math is different once you put it in the table because obviously it has a little bit more stability there, but I bought one of the, you know, the normal ones. They don't sell 90-pound ones. Where am I supposed to find a 90-pound umbrella anchor? Internet, you are not serious people.
Well, no. I told you that at the beginning of the broadcast.
90 pounds?
Jeez.
Hey, if you're not doing anything on July 21st, Marshmello is going to be playing at Nationwide Arena for Major League Soccer's All-Star Concert.
Bo, do you know who Marshmello is?
Yes, I do. That's because the kids love it.
Because that's asked. Well, okay then.
They love it.
I was wondering, like, who does this appeal to? Marshmello concert at Nationwide for the All-Star weekend. Like, the weekend will be cool. The festivities at Lower.com Field will be cool. But why Marshmello?
Will Messi play?
He's Marshmello.
There you go. Roth and Ice up next. We're back tomorrow. Bishop and Friends are here on The Fan.
The only show where sports talk is eclipsed by food talk.
Oh, no.
Common Man and T-Bone.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
The Fan. This is a Fan Action Update.
This Action Update is brought to you by Tipico. Gambling promo code 1-800-GAMBLER. Guardians and Reds both in action tonight in the great state of Ohio, starting in the 6 o'clock hour. The Guardians are -109 on the money line against the Red Sox. Cleveland 16-6 on the year. The Reds host the Phillies and are +107 underdogs on the money line. The total for both games is 8.5 runs. For your Tipico Action Update, I'm Scotty Vegas.
Broadcasting from the Lindsay Honda Studios.
Honda makes the cars. Lindsay makes the difference. Visit LindsayHonda.com.
WBNSFM, HD1 Columbus. The Fan.
Sports.
Center.
Good afternoon. I'm Buddy Wells. Baseball later today. The Reds will look to bounce back from last night's loss. They host the Phillies again this evening at 6:40. Andrew Abbott is on the mound. After an off day on Monday, the Guardians host the Red Sox in the first of a three-game set. Guards are looking for a fifth win in a row. Ben Lively gets the start. First pitch is at 6:10. Three games in the NBA playoffs tonight. Phoenix at Minnesota at 7:30. Indiana's at Milwaukee at 8:30. And the Mavs are at the Clippers at 10. The Timberwolves, Bucks, and Clippers all lead their series 1-9. We have four games in the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. Capitals at the Rangers at 7. Lightning at the Panthers at 7:30. New York and Florida both are ahead 1-0. Then the Avalanche are at the Jets at 9:30, and the Predators are at the Canucks at 10. Winnipeg and Vancouver lead those two series 1-9. And in college football transfer portal news, former Buckeye running back Dallin Hayden announced last night that he's heading to Colorado. Breaking sports news when it happens on The Fan, Ohio.